One, two, three. Okay, now I should be showing on both satellites. I mean, on both. I should be showing in real time on the bottom. Okay, real time on the bottom, and then in 5 second delay on the top.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The world's only unionized Walmart will remain that way after the Quebec Labor Relations Commission rejected the company's challenge. The Walmart located north of Quebec City became the first ever unionized store early last month. The chain argued to the commission that the bargaining unit certified at the store was not valid because it did not include store management personnel. Walmart could still file an appeal, but the United Food and Commercial Workers Union issued a statement this weekend saying they hope that the company will stop stalling and begin contract negotiations. More than half of the employees at the store signed on to enter the union, but the UFCW claims Walmart is trying to extend the list to management in an attempt to reduce support.
Frank Quattrone, the man behind a dot-com bomb, is being sent behind bars. On Wednesday, a federal judge convicted Quattrone of witness tampering and two counts of obstruction of justice. He's charged with instructing employees to destroy incriminating emails during the federal government's investigation of Credit Suisse First Boston's technology group. He's sentenced to 18 months and fined $90,000. Small change for a man worth at least $76 million.
The world's four largest coffee suppliers are aiming to improve conditions in growing countries, but critics are saying it's the wrong tactic. Nestle, Tachibo, Sara Lee, and Kraft have all signed a pact intended to end the use of child labor, forced labor, and to prevent the use of dangerous pesticides. The pact is a voluntary commitment by the four companies to address complaints by consumers and environmental groups that say coffee companies exploit low prices and poor working conditions in a world market with an excess of coffee. Critics of the new pact are arguing that the companies would be more helpful if they cut oversupply in an attempt to lift world prices that have been at a 30-year low since 2002.
Volkswagen is bugging its German workers to give up wages and benefits or face 30,000 layoffs. VW is the latest player across German manufacturing industries like Daimler, Chrysler, and Siemens to demand givebacks. VW's restructuring plan would require employees to forego wage increases for 2 years in an effort to cut more than $2 billion in production costs. The German Metalworkers Union has denounced the wage freeze and is demanding a 4% increase and job protections. Labor contract negotiations begin this week. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Department of Labor show less than expected numbers of Americans applying for first-time unemployment claims per week. Wall Street analysts had predicted new applicants to reach 346,000, but the DOL's figures placed the actual number close to 319,000. It was the sharpest weekly decline since December 2001. However, the drop in claims following Hurricane Charley is reflected in the statistic. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I don't think that President Bush is a Republican. The root of the Republican conservative movement is conservation. I mean, that's what a conservative does. He conserves. The clean air, the clean water, these natural resources, they belong to the public. And he is squandering those resources on his corporate buddies. I'm a Republican. I have conservative values, and I cannot see four more years of that kind of leadership.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Corporate advertising is everywhere. I don't mean on radio, TV, billboards, and other commercial spaces. I also don't merely mean that it's in our public schools, yammering at us in elevators, catching us by surprise in our parks and museums, and otherwise intruding into our community spaces. I mean it's everywhere. I know you're thinking, Hightower, there you go again with the gross exaggeration. But I'm not exaggerating. You want gross? Meet the latest advertising advance, Whizmark. That's whiz as in take a whiz. Yes, we're talking about male urination and the advertising potential therein. Perhaps you think that I'm going to go on a tear about the little TV screens that many places are now putting above the urinals so you can watch an ad as you, well, quiz. But no, that would be almost civilized. I'm not talking about advertising above the urinals. I'm talking about ads in the urinals. Indeed, ads you whiz on. You know those plastic urinal screens that also deodorize? Wismark has now accessorized them with ads. Not some bland printed ad, either. Dr. Richard Deutsch, creator of the Wismark, has brought to us the world's first, are you ready? Interactive urinal communicator. He offers one that has a motion detector. When a gentleman steps forward to do his business, a ring of flashing lights are triggered in the screen, drawing the gentleman's startled attention to your corporate logo, safely protected in the middle of the screen by a waterproof casing. Or if that's too subtle, Wismark offers a voice and sound model with a microprocessor that shouts ad slogans and corporate jingles at the urinator. Still not tacky enough? Got you covered. Dr. Deutsch has the patent on a radio frequency model that can read your ID card and personally greet you when you step up to the urinal. Hey, Frank, good to see you again. This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't even want to know where the ad hucksters are taking us next.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom, we're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, from sea to muddy, polluted, stirred up by the storm. Global warming is coming. Sea. It's Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the studios of Sirius Satellite Radio in New York City. Boy, what a beautiful place. How incredibly state-of-the-art. It's just, it's mind-boggling. Anyhow, here we are. Rama Schneider ably engineering the show and keeping everything going, and Louise answering the phones, and we've got a whole crew back in Vermont, and life is good. Things are going well, at least in the radio business. Things are not going well in the Middle East. Time will tell if that has any bearing at all on how things go in the presidential election, but stripping it of its politics for a moment, to the extent that it's possible for me to do that, I think broadly I can and I do, because I frankly I'm neither Democrat nor Republican, and in fact, well, those of you who regularly know, in the last election, I voted for Ralph Nader for president. I voted for Pat Leahy, a Democrat, for senator. I voted for Jim Jeffords, a Republican, for senator. And Bernie Sanders for congressman, and he was an independent. So there you go. I mean, you know, I'm all over the map. And well, it's easy in Vermont, you'd say. Well, okay. But in any case, here in Iraq, this is what people don't realize. They're 12 hours ahead of us or 10 hours ahead of us. One of the deadliest days, at least from the Iraqi point of view, in Iraq in a long, long time, in over a month anyway. Today's New York Times front page story, a series of tightly sequenced attacks, at least 25 Iraqis were killed by suicide car bombings. Now, I want you to note that, suicide car bombings, because that's a whole level different from guys shooting from rooftops who a little later on can just kind of blend into the countryside, turn in their guns, participate in the political plot. When they move to suicide bombing, you know something really significant has happened. It's been going on for a little while, but all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, now it's really picking up tempo. And a barrage of missile and mortar fire in several neighborhoods across Baghdad on Sunday. The attacks, the New York Times writes, this article by Sabrina Tavernese, however you say it. The attacks were the most widespread in months, seeming to demonstrate the growing power of the insurgency and heightening the sense of uncertainty and chaos in the capital at a time when American forces have already ceded control to insurgents in a number of cities outside of Baghdad. A lot of really important things in that paragraph. I'd like to remind you, after World Wars I and II, the Middle East had been largely carved up by the European empires that controlled so much of the rest of the world, including large chunks of Africa. The Middle East was viewed as sort of an extension of northern Africa. The oil wealth there was becoming more and more strategically important, more and more obvious. We didn't know where all it was. Most of today's major discoveries hadn't been made. Iraq's oil discoveries were made largely in the 50s and 60s. But in 1948 was when the British were forced out of Palestine. Keep that in mind. 1952, 4 years later, King Farouk took a vacation. He was the king of Egypt. Army colonels took over and said, "Don't come back." 1952. 6 years later, in Iraq, the monarchy was overthrown. Again, this being the puppet government put in place by England, or by the United Kingdom. And King Faisal, the young king of Iraq, was murdered and his body was dragged through the streets. 1958. 1962. France said to Algeria, "Okay, enough. We're not willing to die anymore. Sorry. We're out of here." Same thing in Morocco and Tunisia. 1969. In Libya, there was a king who had been installed by the European empires, King Idris. A 27-year-old colonel led a military coup that overthrew and murdered the king of Libya in 1969. That 27-year-old colonel, Gaddafi. In 1974, Haile Selassie, the emperor of Ethiopia, again supported by the European powers, garroted. They took a piece of piano wire, put it around his neck, and twisted it until it cut right through. And in 1979, the Shah of Iran fell. What was this, maybe 20 years after the end of World War II? We'd said, "Okay, we've got this area, we've got all the oil, we've got it all sewn up." We being the Western European countries and powers. No problem, we got it all under control. That was 1945, 46, 47. By 48, the run had started. Now, it is in my mind, and you know, maybe I'm being harsh, but I don't think so. I think I'm just being realistic here. I don't think there's anything other than realism to say that the bottom line here is that very, very simply, that George Bush doesn't get it. This guy, where was he in history class? I thought he studied politics at Yale. Didn't anybody tell him this is what happens when you try and go into the Middle East and be an imperial power? When you go into the Middle East and say, "We're here, we're going to liberate you, we're going to take care of you, we're going to let our companies come in and run your economy, we're going to let our puppets run your government. By the way, we want to make sure you sell us oil at cheap, cheap prices. Well, they say it's still working in Saudi Arabia. No, I'm sorry, it's not. The Saudis made a deal with the devil. Good old King Saud, the Saudi royal family in the early years made a deal with, what was his name, Ism bin Wahab, as I recall. Wahab, I remember, because he was the founder of Wahhabism. Wahhabism in Islam is sort of like the Pat Robertson variation of Christianity in the United States. You know, Pat Robertson, who said that it was God allowed 9/11 to happen. It was God's punishment for America having homosexuality, tolerating it. And Wahhab and his Wahhabists were given free rein in Saudi Arabia, were given lots of money, because the Saudis wanted to create a government that was Islam in name, but secular in function. The bottom line is, they wanted the money. They wanted the oil money, and they knew that they had to suck up to the Western oil companies to get it. There were certain compromises they were going to have to make. And they did. But the compromise, the price of the compromises got really high in 1991. And this is where all of this stuff started. 1991, Saddam Hussein looks at Kuwait. Now, Kuwait had historically been, you know, not a separate country. It had been a province of Iraq. And Saddam Hussein and the Kuwaitis were, and there's this huge oil field, Iraqi oil field, just over the Kuwaiti border. And according to the Iraqis, and I've never seen this refuted, so I think it's probably true, as far as I know. The Kuwaitis were drilling what are called slant wells. You drill at a diagonal under the border, the edge of their border, into the Iraqi oil fields. And Saddam says to April Gillespie, the, you know, our representative in Iraq, I'm going to take back my 38th or 39th province, whichever, 37th province, that state that calls itself Kuwait. I'm going to take that back. Do you have any problem with that? And she says, basically, you know, that's an internal matter for you to decide. And he thinks that the United States just said, okay, cool, no problem. And maybe, in fact, we did. Maybe, in fact, we did. But what the Bush administration had not contended with, this being the first Bush administration, was the power of the PR machine that the Kuwaiti government controlled with their dollars. So you get this daughter, who is the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador, you get this woman, this young woman, who presents herself before Congress and before the press as just a Kuwaiti. We don't know that she's actually working for a PR firm. We don't know that the story that she's telling is completely fabricated. She lives in Washington, D.C. And she says, oh, I personally witnessed them taking babies, premature babies, out of incubators and throwing the babies on the floor and running off with the incubators. Those awful Iraqis invading Kuwait. Well, you know, war is hell. I'll give you that. But that was the soundbite that made the political pressure irresistible. And all of a sudden, George Herbert Walker Bush had to fight back. And so, you know, we took Iraq. Or we took Kuwait back. And in the process, killed hundreds of thousands, according to Osama bin Laden, not the best and most reliable source. According to Saddam Hussein, we killed about 1 million between the war and the sanctions thereafter. And we pushed Saddam all the way back up into Iraq. However, in order to do that, we had to put American forces in Saudi Arabia, and thus began this whole thing. And if you don't understand how this all happened, then you are doomed to believe the idiotic sound bites coming out of the Bush administration. Why do they hate us? Asked George W. Bush right after 9/11. I am amazed, he said, that in some Islamic countries there is a vitriolic hatred of America. I'm amazed that there's such misunderstanding of what our country is about that people would hate us. Like most Americans, I just can't believe it, because I know how good we are. the National Review on its cover. They hate us because we're powerful, rich, and good. Right. Yeah. I could just see Osama, as Pat Buchanan said on TV this week. Yeah, Osama bin Laden sitting in his cave, and he stumbles across a copy of the Bill of Rights. He goes, holy cow, we can't allow this! Come on. There are nearly 100 democracies in the world. This is not a war against democracy. They hate us not for who we are. They hate us for our foreign policy. They hate us for what we have done. I'll lay out a couple of the specifics of this, and then we'll get back to what, therefore, what does this mean for what we can do in Iraq and what we can't do in Iraq. And I think that's probably the most important thing. The disaster, the absolute disaster that the Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration, the neocons in this administration have led us into, that has led to the death of thousands, tens of thousands in that region, unnecessarily. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
NBC Tonight, a big night of Monday premieres, starting with an all-new Fear Factor Couples.
I can't do it!
Then, the hottest show on TV is back, Las Vegas. A soldier home from war drops the biggest bombshell of all.
Will you marry me?
Finally, the series premiere of LAX, the stories we never hear from the place we all know.
Welcome to the United States. So, where are you hiding the drugs?
Heather Locklear, Blair Underwood, LAX, following Fear Factor Couples in the premiere of Las Vegas, NBC Tonight.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Don't stand by while democracy dies. Don't stand by. Don't swallow their lies. Don't stand by.
Excellent suggestion there, folks. Don't stand by while democracy dies. Now, we've got to get involved. And the first step to getting involved is getting informed. And there's so much disinformation out there. It is so important to be able to spot the lie. For example, by the way, I didn't tell you that the incubator story, by the way, was a total fabrication, total lie. Which is not to say, as I said, war is not hell, but it was, you know, the pressure from that thing pushed the whole. That was the major button pusher. Turns out the whole thing was organized and orchestrated by a PR firm in Washington D.C. on behalf of the Kuwaiti royal family. Here we have President George Bush. They hate what they see right here in this chamber. He's talking to Congress, right? A democratically elected government. They hate our freedoms, our freedom of religion, our freedom of speech, our freedom to vote and assemble and disagree with each other. No, they don't. They may not want that kind of government for themselves, but they don't hate the fact that we have it. They don't much care. They want us out of their lands. And they have a 2,000-year history of pushing us out of our lands, and then we push back in, and then they push back out, and they push back in. Does it take a rocket scientist to figure this out? Obviously, it requires somebody with an IQ higher than George Bush or Dick Cheney's, but I think that the average American can easily figure this out. They don't hate us for who we are. They hate us for what we did. Very simple. Very simple. And in fact, they said so. Osama declared war on the United States. His declaration was clear and unambiguous. I'll get to that in a minute. Let's go to the phones here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. TomHartman.com, by the way, our website. If you want to drop into the chat room. Hey to the folks in the chat room. I don't have it up today. I can't see it because I'm broadcasting live from New York City. But my best wishes to you. I know that, you know, Rama's probably in there and Louise. And Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico is on line one. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, you know, you kind of stole my thunder in your last piece when you started talking about we push in and they push us back out. Because that's pretty much what I was going to say. It's interesting because I think the thing that really gets to, the Western mindset, especially with the spin machine put on it, is the tactics that are used by a lot of the fundamentalists that want us gone. And I think that that's the thing that really floors people is when, you know, the way they look at life, they're perfectly willing to go in and the result being 300, you know, many of them children killed and what have you. Or, for example, the Swiss, who pretty much haven't made war on anybody in, you know, God knows how many hundred years.
800.
A bunch of Swiss tourists being murdered at Karnak, you know, whatever it was about 20 years ago. But fundamentally, you're absolutely right. They just want us gone. And until we are gone, this is going to keep happening.
Yeah, and this is what now the opinion polls are showing. You ask the average Iraqi on the street, what should the United States do? They say, get out. We can take care of this.
No, absolutely, and it's always been that way. I mean, we restructured the Middle East, the Treaty of Versailles, and it's, I mean, it was a mess before, but, you know, it's just been a disaster ever since.
Absolutely. The Treaty of Versailles was one of the biggest disasters to come out of World War One. It was also the treaty that defined the reparations that Germany had to pay and placed them so punitively high that Germany devalued its currency in order to be able to pay them off, which led to the hyperinflation, which led to the rise of Adolf Hitler. I mean, the consequences of a bunch of, you know, white guys from Europe sitting around and saying, okay, let's figure out how the world should look, and let's just do it by fiat. Are just absolutely awesome. I mean,
you know, Tom, there's something I think most people don't know in the West, and that is that World War One, the entire Arabian Peninsula was controlled by the Ottoman Empire, and they were Muslims as well, and the Muslims wanted them out too.
Oh yeah, and they, I mean, right up through the end of the 19th century, they controlled all the way up into Central Europe or into Southern Europe. I mean, it's
yeah.
just, and they, and now they're saying they want it back. I mean, and we're just fueling the flames of this Arab nationalism of just, you know, creating this whole blowback. That, I mean, there is absolutely no way we can so-called win in Iraq, in my opinion. This is a disaster that George Bush has created for us. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The world's only unionized Walmart will remain that way after the Quebec Labor Relations Commission rejected the company's challenge. The Walmart located north of Quebec City became the first ever unionized store early last month. The chain argued to the commission that the bargaining unit certified at the store was not valid because it did not include store management personnel. Walmart could still file an appeal, but the United Food and Commercial Workers Union issued a statement this weekend saying they hope that the company will stop stalling and begin contract negotiations. More than half of the employees at the store signed on to enter the union, but the UFCW claims Walmart is trying to extend the list to management in an attempt to reduce support.
Frank Quattrone, the man behind a dot-com bomb, is being sent behind bars. On Wednesday, a federal judge convicted Quattrone of witness tampering and two counts of obstruction of justice. He's charged with instructing employees to destroy incriminating emails during the federal government's investigation of Credit Suisse First Boston's technology group. He's sentenced to 18 months and fined $90,000. Small change for a man worth at least $76 million.
The world's four largest coffee suppliers are aiming to improve conditions in growing countries, but critics are saying it's the wrong tactic. Nestle, Tachibo, Sara Lee, and Kraft have all signed a pact intended to end the use of child labor, forced labor, and to prevent the use of dangerous pesticides. The pact is a voluntary commitment by the four companies to address complaints by consumers and environmental groups that say coffee companies exploit low prices and poor working conditions in a world market with an excess of coffee. Critics of the new pact are arguing that the companies would be more helpful if they cut oversupply in an attempt to lift world prices that have been at a 30-year low since 2002.
Volkswagen is bugging its German workers to give up wages and benefits or face 30,000 layoffs. VW is the latest player across German manufacturing industries like Daimler, Chrysler, and Siemens to demand givebacks. VW's restructuring plan would require employees to forego wage increases for 2 years in an effort to cut more than $2 billion in production costs. The German Metalworkers Union has denounced the wage freeze and is demanding a 4% increase and job protections. Labor contract negotiations begin this week. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Department of Labor show less than expected numbers of Americans applying for first-time unemployment claims per week. Wall Street analysts had predicted new applicants to reach 346,000, but the DOL's figures placed the actual number close to 319,000. It was the sharpest weekly decline since December 2001. However, the drop in claims following Hurricane Charley is reflected in the statistic. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Good old USA, well, I'd just like to say, tomorrow's dreams are always coming true.
And so this demonstrates the idea, ideas are more powerful than nations or armies. This is just an absolute reality, it's an absolute truism. Welcome back, by the way, Tom Hartman here with you. this is such an important concept. No army in history has been able to sustain anything more than a temporary victory over an idea. It just, you know, I mean, it might be a generation, it might be two, but it's not going to last. This is the story of empires fallen. And the most powerful idea is the idea of nationalism, the idea of this is our tribe. He may be a bum, but he's our bum. Can you imagine if Mexico militarily attacked the United States? How even the most extreme lefties would be rallying around George Bush and repulsing them? I mean, it's got nothing to do with all those secondary and tertiary ideas about democracy or liberal or conservative or this or that. No, nationally, just the idea of this is my country. It's an extension of this is my family. This is my home. This is my community. This is my nation. It's a human impulse. It's a this is my tribe. And that concept of this is my tribe is something that we have so easily forgotten. We have so completely overlooked in the Middle East. Helicopters flew into the Bradley. This is from the New York Times today. This story about, again, yesterday, one of the bloodiest, or this morning, one of the bloodiest days in Iraq. American forces appeared to be facing a guerrilla insurgency that is more sophisticated and more widespread than ever before. Last month, attacks on American forces reached their highest level since the war began. Since the war began! An average of 87 a day! 87 times a day we are under attack. This is not the kind of response you get because somebody's saying, you know, if you will kill the Americans, I'll pay you some money. No. No. What you're seeing here now is the rise of an idea. The idea being nationalism. And the reason that you didn't see that in the beginning when we first went into the country was because the Iraqis thought that we were going to knock out Saddam and then say, okay, he's gone. You guys put together a government. In fact, Sadr was holding elections a month after we were done. In June, Sadr was holding elections. And many of the people that he elected, these were local community elections in towns all over Iraq. And many of those people that were elected by Sadr are still in power. And when we tried to put our appointed folks in there, in a couple of cases, the locals revolted. In one case, they even killed the appointed guy. This is the power of nationalism. This is the power of, it's our community, buddy. And now we read in the news here, in today's news, this tank got attacked. This Bradley fighting vehicle. The giant tank. And some Americans were injured, but they got away from the thing. But we don't want this the technology of this thing to fall into the hands of the terrorists. Perhaps we think they have a super sophisticated lab and a supercomputer that can reverse engineer it or something. So we send a helicopter in there. You got a bunch of Iraqis who are starting to loot this thing. Send a helicopter in there and spray it with fire. The newspaper reports, the New York Times, the helicopter fired upon the anti-Iraqi forces in the Bradley, preventing the loss of sensitive equipment and weapons. However, an unknown number of insurgents and Iraqi civilians were wounded or killed in the incident. Now, what has come out of this? El Arabiya, the homegrown Iraqi Arab television network that is carried now not just in Iraq but in several other Middle Eastern countries and certainly feeds to Al Jazeera. Now in this bastion of free speech that we've created based on American ideals, we've said, well, no, Al Jazeera, they can't be there. So anyhow, you've got a reporter. A reporter for this network, a guy by the name of Mazen Altumezi. And he's near the tank. He's reporting on this thing. He's got a 12-year-old girl standing next to him. and he gets hit. 13 people killed, 61 wounded by helicopter fire because they happen to be near this tank that's disabled. And his cameraman films him getting hit. And, well, here's directly from the New York Times. Al Arabiya showed compelling images that followed the journalist, Mazen El-Tumezi, as he stumbled away from the scene of the airstrikes yelling, "I'm dying! I'm dying!" And soon he was dead. We're doing the same thing we did in Vietnam. We're going, "Oh, look at body count. We killed 400 of their guys. They killed three of ours. We must be winning." Forgetting the fact that we're in their country. If you kill 400 of their guys in their country, you now have 400 very angry families. The British discovered that here in 1774 with the Boston Massacre. Sometimes those families aren't easily consoled. And those families have friends and extended relations. I mean, a family, and even an immediate family in Iraq where you've got, you know, you can have up to four wives and you got 6, 8, 10, 12 kids. A family might represent 20, 30, 50, 100, 200, 300 people. Now we killed another 300 of them today. You just made another 5,000 enemies. You just radicalized another 5,000 people. You can't do it this way, George. It does, and John, Mr. Kerry. It doesn't work. Now, my hope is, and actually my belief is, that John Kerry understands this, that he gets this. And he also knows that if he were to say this out loud like I am, I'm not running for any office. I can just tell you the truth. But if John Kerry were to say something like this, he would be hung and quartered. I mean, it just, you know, as president you could say it. But as presidential candidate, no way. Political suicide. People say, "Well, what about the idea of democracy? If ideas are so powerful, what about the idea of democracy? Won't people over there fight and die for democracy?" Sure they will, in the context of nationalism. The first idea is, this is my country, right or wrong. Remember that phrase from the Vietnam War? From the folks who were the supporters of the Vietnam War? Like George W. Bush? The ones who didn't want to go over and fight, particularly. But they still supported it. My country, right or wrong? My country, right or wrong, is a powerful, powerful meme. Thought virus. It is more powerful than democracy. And democracy is one of the most powerful ones out there. It is sweeping the world. But it has to be democracy in my country, right or wrong. And that's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to go into a country and say, "We're here, see this gun pointed at you? You're going to become democratic. And you're going to do it with the people that we decide you're going to do it with." "No, we didn't think that was democracy. We thought democracy meant we got to do it with the people we decide." "No, sorry, you're going to do it with the people we decide." "But isn't that..." No, that's just the way it is. That's the way the Bush administration has decided to do it." "But I didn't think..." "No. You get it? This is a mess." Sabin Aboud, the head of the emergency room at Yarmouk Hospital, says, "We can say there were innocent people who died today, last night, yesterday, in Iraq." So what did Osama have to say about all this? If George Bush is going to prattle on and on with idiotic statements like, "They hate our freedoms, they hate our religion, our freedom of speech, our right to vote and assemble and disagree with each other," which is just, as I would think any kid in high school would be able to figure out, it's got to take more than that. sorry, for people to be willing to kill themselves. Right? I mean, there's a lot of people in the United States who I think, you know, justifiably or who really believed that communism was an idea that had the power to take over the world and therefore threatened our way of life because it might end up on our shores. But were they willing to strap dynamite on themselves and walk into the Kremlin? I don't think so. I mean, it takes a lot to be willing to die for something. So what is it? What is it? Well, here it is. Osama's declaration. This is what Osama bin Laden said in 1998. This was described by Bernard Lewis in Foreign Affairs as the declaration of the World Islamic Front for Jihad against the Jews and the Crusaders. You know, it plays well to the Palestinians and the Arabs to flog on Jewish people as well, and then kind of lump them in with the Christians, right? Anyhow, here's bin Laden. This is what he said when he said, "We're going to get you if you don't stop doing this." And again, I'm not saying that we are responsible for 9/11. The terrorists who committed 9/11 are responsible for 9/11. And it's important for us to understand that if we hadn't been pursuing the policies that we were pursuing, it wouldn't have happened. And if we don't change our policies, we're going to see a lot more and a lot worse. And that does not mean going in there and bombing them back to the Stone Age, to quote General Lewis in Vietnam. Or LeMay, was it LeMay? No, that was World War II. Anyway. Since God laid down the Arabian Peninsula, Saddam says, no calamity has ever befallen it like these crusader hosts. Then Bush, of course, says, we're gonna fight a crusade, right? In response to this. Okay. Anyhow, like these crusader hosts that have spread in it like locusts, crowding its soil, eating its fruits, and destroying its verdure, its pastures and things, its plants. And this at a time when the nations contend against the Muslims like diners jostling over a bowl of food. See, here, this is really what it's about. Bin Laden was hired by the CIA to go into Afghanistan and create a religiously and nationalistically motivated force to throw out the Russians. We were trying to tweak the nose of the Russian Empire, and we succeeded. And we took the rich son of one of the richest families in Saudi Arabia. We figured, yeah, we can trust this guy. He's good friends. His brother, after all, was a business partner with George W. Bush. His father was a business partner with George Herbert Walker Bush. We can trust him. This back in the 70s, the 80s. No problem. Let's send him in. We don't want to send American forces in. That would be a declaration of war against the Russians, against the Soviets. You can't have that. Let's send him in to throw out the Russians. Create the Mujahideen. And he did. And then he goes back to Saudi Arabia. And he says, let my Mujahideen people provide some security for you. Because Iraq, Saddam Hussein, whom Osama bin Laden hated, because he was not a pious Muslim. He was a secularist. He believed in a government free of religion, and women didn't have to wear the veil in Iraq, and they could work, and they could drive. Osama bin Laden hated Saddam Hussein. And Saddam Hussein was threatening Saudi Arabia, threatening their eastern border. And Osama went to the Saudi royal family and said, I still have my Mujahideen fighters left over from throwing the Russians out of Afghanistan. Let us take on Osama bin Laden. It's all right there in the history. And the Saudi royal family said, consulted with their American friends and said, no, don't think so. We're going to have the Americans do it. And American tanks came in. And American tanks were positioned, this is in the late 80s, early 90s, culminating in 91 with the Gulf War. And we pushed back against Saddam, and he stopped pushing on that border. And then the Gulf War happened in 91, and we stationed thousands of soldiers, including women who did not wear the veil, who were driving, and who were not Muslim on Saudi soil. And the Wahhabist read of Islam, whether it's right or wrong, doesn't matter. This is the Wahhabist belief, is that you cannot have infidels on the Arabian Peninsula. The entire Arabian Peninsula is sacred ground. And thus we see here, this Osama bin Laden's fatwa. For more than 7 years, the United States is occupying the lands of Islam and the holiest of its territories, Arabia, plundering its riches, overwhelming its rulers, humiliating its people, threatening its people, neighbors, and using its bases in the peninsula as a spearhead to fight against the neighboring Islamic people. That's why they sent those 15 Saudis with box cutters to hit our towers and the Pentagon. It's got nothing to do with, oh, they hate our freedom. Wake up, America. George W. is leading us down the wrong road. 10 minutes
before. This is Leonid Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Scientists in Europe are paying close attention to the ocean currents that keep them warm. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. England, Norway, and other countries around the North Atlantic Ocean would have very chilly climates if it were not for a great ocean current that brings warm water from the tropics. Scientists are examining this ocean current to get a better understanding of what it's doing and how it might change. Marek Srokas is the science coordinator with the Natural Environment Research Council in England. He's part of an international team that's examining the status of the Atlantic current to see if it's showing signs of change or even failure. The technical name for this current is the thermohaline circulation. Sirkis says it has changed in the past, and those shifts are connected to major and relatively quick changes in climate.
Data from marine sediments and ice cores suggests that rapid changes in climate have taken place, rapid being over a period of 10 years rather than the sort of 100 years that we normally think of or longer, and that these changes are related to, or at least some of the changes are related to, changes in the thermohaline circulation of the North Atlantic.
Sirkis says variations in the ocean current might trigger rapid climate changes around the North Atlantic. If that happened, some countries might experience more severe winters and shorter growing seasons. Sirkis says the probability of such a change is fairly low, but if it did happen, it would have a major impact. The European research team has worked with scientists from the United States to deploy sensors across the Atlantic Ocean that will measure water temperature and salinity. These are critical elements of the thermohaline circulation, and they could change as the Earth's atmosphere grows warmer. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
In November of 2004, we've got to get out the boat and even the score. When the GOP...
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 5 minutes before the hour, 4.5 minutes actually, broadcasting live from New York City from the studios of the Sirius radio, satellite radio system. And very pleased to be here to be guests of the folks at Sirius. We're having a great time. 15 hijackers from Saudi Arabia. What does the Islamic world think of this? 31% of Turks believe that suicide bombings against U.S. troops in Iraq are justified. 46% of everybody, of the Pakistanis, believe this. Not just, hey, you know, maybe they shouldn't be there. No, suicide bombings against troops. 66% of Moroccans. 70% of Jordanians. I mean, this is one of our strongest allies in the Middle East, Jordan. Of course, 60% of their population are Palestinians. Maybe that has something to do with it. I mean, they're a little upset with us. Believe that suicide bombings are the right thing to do. In Morocco, while only 7% of Pakistanis think well of George Bush, in Morocco, Osama bin Laden has a 45% favorable rating, 55% in Jordan, 65% in Pakistan. As documented, Pat Buchanan's new book, Where the Right Went Wrong, he's got some pretty startling information in here, which is just broadly, commonly available everywhere else, but he puts it together really well. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Humboldt County is... Con called and refused to go on the air, accused me of being desperate for Kerry. Oh, jeez. I love it. Yeah, this, you know, I want John Kerry to speak up about this, too. He doesn't have the courage to do it, and George Bush doesn't have the intelligence to do it. Dave in Humboldt County, what's up, Dave? We got about a half a minute here.
Well, good morning, Tom. An observation that calls for your thoughts, and that is you appeal to logic, to reason, to knowledge. You are open to evidence. That is you. That is your method. What we're getting on these right-wing talk radio shows is deception, gimmicks, manipulations, all kinds of ploys. They got two going right now. They have callers calling in saying, wow, all of my black and white friends are just switching over to Bush. And
yeah, no, they've been doing this for some time, Dave. It's nothing new. It's the same old song and dance. You know, the right wing, the cons, the talk. See, they're very well organized. They've done their homework. They've figured out which psychological buttons to push. They focus group this stuff to death. They get the message out. Roger Ailes' memos and whatnot. They get the message out and they say, here are the talking points of the day.
And isn't it terrible?
And that's it. Dave, thanks for calling. And I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where our talking points come from Madison and Jefferson, not some right-wing think tank.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The world's only unionized Walmart will remain that way after the Quebec Labor Relations Commission rejected the company's challenge. The Walmart located north of Quebec City became the first ever unionized store early last month. The chain argued to the commission that the bargaining unit certified at the store was not valid because it did not include store management personnel. Walmart could still file an appeal, but the United Food and Commercial Workers Union issued a statement this weekend saying they hope that the company will stop stalling and begin contract negotiations. More than half of the employees at the store signed on to enter the union, but the UFCW claims Walmart is trying to extend the list to management in an attempt to reduce support.
Frank Quattrone, the man behind a dot-com bomb, is being sent behind bars. On Wednesday, a federal judge convicted Quattrone of witness tampering and two counts of obstruction of justice. He's charged with instructing employees to destroy incriminating emails during the federal government's investigation of Credit Suisse First Boston's technology group. He's sentenced to 18 months and fined $90,000. Small change for a man worth at least $76 million.
The world's four largest coffee suppliers are aiming to improve conditions in growing countries, but critics are saying it's the wrong tactic. Nestle, Tachibo, Sara Lee, and Kraft have all signed a pact intended to end the use of child labor, forced labor, and to prevent the use of dangerous pesticides. The pact is a voluntary commitment by the four companies to address complaints by consumers and environmental groups that say coffee companies exploit low prices and poor working conditions in a world market with an excess of coffee. Critics of the new pact are arguing that the companies would be more helpful if they cut oversupply in an attempt to lift world prices that have been at a 30-year low since 2002.
Volkswagen is bugging its German workers to give up wages and benefits or face 30,000 layoffs. VW is the latest player across German manufacturing industries like Daimler, Chrysler, and Siemens to demand givebacks. VW's restructuring plan would require employees to forego wage increases for 2 years in an effort to cut more than $2 billion in production costs. The German Metalworkers Union has denounced the wage freeze and is demanding a 4% increase and job protections. Labor contract negotiations begin this week. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Department of Labor show less than expected numbers of Americans applying for first-time unemployment claims per week. Wall Street analysts had predicted new applicants to reach 346,000, but the DOL's figures placed the actual number close to 319,000. It was the sharpest weekly decline since December 2001. However, the drop in claims following Hurricane Charley is reflected in the statistic. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I don't think that President Bush is a Republican. The root of the Republican conservative movement is conservation. I mean, that's what a conservative does. He conserves. The clean air, the clean water, these natural resources, they belong to the public. And he is squandering those resources on his corporate buddies. I'm a Republican. I have conservative values, and I cannot see four more years of that kind of leadership.
MoveOnPack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
I can't begin to tell you how proud I am of the assaults that Bush, Cheney, and gang are making on America's decorated veterans. Of course, they're all over John Kerry, who's running to depose this regime of chicken hawks. Using a former Nixon hatchet man as their tool, they're assailing Kerry for his 3 Purple Hearts and 2 other Medals of Valor. The Bushites want you to believe that such honors are doled out like prizes and boxes of Cracker Jacks, which is as close as they got to any war medals. But how about Max Cleland? The former U.S. Senator from Georgia doesn't need medals to show his bravery and sacrifice. He came home from Vietnam minus 2 legs and an arm. Yet this is not enough for the Chicken Hawks, who have actually tried to suggest that he didn't deserve his Bathed in the Blood medals. Indeed, when Cleland pulled his wheelchair up to the front gate of Bush's ranchette outside of Crawford, Texas, where the president was vacationing in August, George dispatched his aides to tell Cleland that the prez was too busy vacationing even to accept the letter that he had come to deliver. It was a letter calling on the Bushites to stop their dishonorable political attacks on decorated vets. "Where is the shame?" asked Cleland, sitting in the hot August sun in his wheelchair after George W. stiffed him. Shame? Bush is immune to shame. He used family connections to avoid going to Vietnam in his day, where he might possibly have encountered the kind of injuries that Cleland suffered, though Bush proclaimed that he supported that war with all of his heart. So did Vice President Dick Cheney, who's also now assailing Kerry's war record. Dick, who grabbed 5 draft deferments to keep him from having to face the reality of war, smugly says, "I had other priorities in the 60s than military service." This is Jim Hightower saying, those who had other priorities while cheering the war from afar ought not now be sliming those who put their lives at risk.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
Hello from the road, folks. You know, the only thing better than a twofer is a threefer. That's why this fall I'm staying at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels. See, I get triple Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards credit every time. So I earn flights 3 times faster. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com. We'll see you there.
Offer good for qualifying stays in the U.S. before November 30th, 2004. For details, visit choicehotels.com. Triple credit means 1.5 credits instead of a standard 0.5.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from New York City, the headquarters, from the headquarters of Sirius Satellite Radio. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, our website, TomHartman.com. You can drop into the chat room there and participate in the, Rama tells me it's going great, normal, extraordinary, insightful, mind-boggling, enlightening conversations you'll discover there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number online, too. We have Pat from Oklahoma City listening. Hey, Pat, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling.
I would like to know your thoughts on, do you think that George Bush is so fundamentalist and shoulder-to-shoulder with Saudi Arabia that he would go as far as to take so much of our rights away that you could see him putting us women in burqas and sitting in the back seats of cars someday?
Well, you're mixing metaphors or mixing religions here. George Bush is a fundamentalist, and he does allow his religion to influence his both domestic and his foreign policies. However, his form of fundamentalism says that women cannot be priests. That, you know, I mean, they take literally in the Bible. I forget where in the New Testament it is. I think it's in Paul's letter to the Romans, but I could be wrong. Where he says that women should sit in the back of the church, they should cover their heads, they should keep their mouths shut. You know, things like that, that a priest should be a man, ideally one who's not married, but it's okay if he's married, who's got, you know, good moral character, blah, blah, blah. And I think that Bush's fundamentalism is, you know, of the uniquely American Protestant fundamentalist type. And so, it means, and there's a funny dissonance. It means that there's this ideal of the woman being, you know, quiet, subservient, obedient, you know, the promise keeper's shtick, and staying at home. And yet at the same time, he's advancing economic policies that have destroyed the ability of a single wage earner to raise a family successfully. You know, all the union jobs are going away. All that, you know, all of our manufacturing base is going off to other countries. And so there's that issue. There's the inherent schizophrenia of that. With regard to his policies in the Middle East, I think that there are three issues here that have to do with George Bush and how misled and mistaken he is. Number one, he's got this idea that Armageddon is coming. I mean, he's a millennialist, an Armageddonist, a believer that, you know, Jesus is going to return any minute, and there are certain criteria that have to be established for that to happen. And one of those is the recreation of the State of Israel. Another one is the recreation of the Second Temple on the Temple Mount, which just happens to be occupied by a mosque at the moment. In fact, one of the, you know, a mosque that was built in the 600s, that was built 6 centuries ago, and that has been sitting there for a long, long time and is not going to go easily or lightly. So on the one hand, you've got a foreign policy that is influenced by this ideal of bringing back Jesus that I think influences the way both he treats Israel and the Palestinians. And secondly, the fact that he's an oil guy and he's under the sway of and in the hands of both the oil industries and the defense industries. And so he's doing whatever he can to increase our consumption of oil. Now, during the Bush administration, we've seen that the deduction, if you buy a Hummer, we've seen the tax deduction you get go from $27,000, it was $17,000 back, you know, 6-8 years ago, when I actually bought an SUV because we lived out in the, we had a half mile long dirt road that was in the mountains of Vermont, and we actually had to have a four-wheel drive vehicle. And at that time, if you bought a four-wheel drive vehicle that had weighed over 6,000 pounds, you get a $17,000 tax deduction. It's now $100,000 if you buy an SUV. We sold it very quickly, by the way, traded in a Honda Insight once we got off the dirt road, which got 70 miles to the gallon. We went from 7 miles to the gallon to 70. But anyhow, the point is that he's got this oil policy. He's in bed with all these oil people. And the defense industry, you know, Don Rumsfeld was a lobbyist for Star Wars before he became Secretary of Defense. And then he's got this very simplistic worldview that says that there's good people and bad people, or as he would say, good people and evil people, and that the evil people are the ones who have to be destroyed, and that it's not about ideas, it's about good and evil, and you combine all of these things, and you've got this very bizarre toxic brew. Am I making any sense, Pat?
Yes, absolutely. Tom, thank you very much, and I'm going to keep listening and rant on.
Okay, thanks. And I know you're listening on Sirius. Be sure to let Sirius know that you enjoy the program.
I sure will. Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Thanks, Pat. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Now, what happened in Afghanistan got pushed to page 11 of today's New York Times. I want to get to that in just a second. Let's hear from taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe first, though. Hey, number 12, what's up?
Yeah, I was just driving by this place we have here called Museum Hill, and there's this, like, just hundreds of people, and I guess, John Edwards was speaking there today. And he just finished about, half hour ago or so.
Oh, you didn't have a chance to hear him.
No, I'm driving around. I don't have the most interest in him, but it was just kind of interesting. I don't even remember it being announced anywhere, and there's just all these John Kerry stickers going up one side of the road and down the other. I guess there's...
Must have been a media blackout. let's put on our conspiracy caps here, number 12.
Hey, also, I one thing that I'd like to gloat about a little bit.
Okay.
In approximately, what, let's say, 9 hours,
yeah.
8 hours, the harassment known as the Clinton-era assault weapons ban expires, and good riddance.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. I would love to speak with you, because I know that that's your position on that, and I'm of multiple minds on this, but broadly I think that we should have the assault weapons ban, even though it's relatively ineffectual, which I think is probably your argument against it.
Because Dianne Feinstein is the one defining what an assault weapons ban is, and according to her, they want to renew it and upgrade it, and according to her and her ilk, a semi-automatic shotgun is used for blasting ducks is now reclassified as an assault weapon. But it's basically, if you're going to let gay people define what gay rights are, and if you want to let women define what abortion rights are, I really think you should ought to let law-abiding gun owners define what gun rights are, not the gun haters. And I will not bend one inch on that right there, because I'm not going to let any gun hater define my rights any more than a gay person is going to let some religious fundamentalist define their rights.
Well, there's a lot of sense in what you say. So, let's talk about it for a minute here. It seems to me that the folks who are saying, come on, let this thing expire, it's nonsense. I got an email here from Elvis. He says that it's an ill-conceived and deceptively named assault weapons ban. He says even with the assault weapons ban, it was still legal to buy and possess high-capacity magazines produced before 94. They're being imported. This thing is really more cosmetic than real.
Cosmetic.
Yeah, okay. So if you and I agree that it's cosmetic, and I'm willing to give you that to a large extent, and that it's not really all that effective at getting things like...
It's not effective at all, because the biggest fear that the gun controllers have is when this thing expires, that we're going to look behind the curtain and we're going to realize that the thing did nothing for 10 years.
Well, could you buy a Mac 10 yesterday?
I went out and, there's a Tech 9 available at the gun store for $299. I bought a Romanian post-ban AK-47 in 2001. All they are military-styled semi-automatic rifles. Tell me this, I'll split hairs for a second here. There's a Ruger who is based out of Southport, Connecticut. His company has been making semi-automatic firearms for 50 years or so. There is a rifle called a Ruger Mini 30 that shoots the exact same bullet in the exact same semi-automatic fashion as an AK-47. They are functionally identical, yet...
It got written into the legislation with a specific exemption. I know where you're going with that. And so here's the question. How do you agree with me that a weapon that is not appropriate for hunting but is appropriate for warfare, for killing people, is a weapon that really we shouldn't have on the streets of America?
I would like you to read the Second Amendment, and if you can find me a provision in there that even mentions hunting, I'll discuss that with you. It says, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
No, you're only reading half of it. You're only reading half of it. It says, in order to have a well-regulated militia, the right of people. Let me just share with you number 12 very quickly. This was an original draft of the Second Amendment that was put together by the Pennsylvania minority. It was put forth on December 18th, 1787. And here it is. And there were a whole bunch of competing ones. That the people have the right to keep and bear arms for the defense of themselves in their own state or the United States or for the purpose of killing game. And no law shall be passed for disarming the people or any of them unless for crimes committed or real danger of public injury from individuals. And as standing armies in the time of peace are dangerous to liberty, they ought not to be kept up, and the military should be kept under strict subordination to and governed by the civil powers. Now, that was really the sentiment brought, right across the board of the founders. And what happened was a committee got a hold of it, and we ended up with the Second Amendment as it is. But the bottom line was that if they intended, if the founders intended for military weapons to fight wars to be in the hands of we the people, why can't you and I own a shoulder-fired surface-to-air missile?
If you want to get into that argument, that's not an arm. That is ordnance. There's a difference between an arm and an ordnance, and anything that requires generally either one or more people to operate and is not a personal weapon is considered ordnance. And I believe a shoulder-fired missile, even though it could technically be operated by one, maybe two people, that is not considered an arm.
They can easily be operated by one person.
Okay.
They can easily be operated by one person. Anti-tank, anti-personnel devices, these anti-tank missiles that these guys are running around in Iraq with, taking out our Humvees. How can that not be an arm if it's a one-person device. If that's your definition, I don't think the founders necessarily would have agreed with you, because, you know, technically a cannon can be operated by one person. In fact, usually it is.
Usually, yes. And basically, when this thing was written, don't forget, people said, oh, yeah, there was nothing but a bunch of muzzle-loading muskets. Well, don't forget, that's what the British military had, too. So they basically were condoning, if you want to take that argument, modern military weapons be available to we the people, because the same thing that we were shooting the British with, they were shooting us with.
Right. So if your argument is, I mean, you really have to, here's the schizophrenia of your argument, number 12. If your argument is that the Second Amendment intends for us to be able to have weapons that really are only used for military action, then we should be able to have shoulder-launched rockets, rocket-propelled grenades.
This is a provision out there. There's the 1934, FDR-sponsored gun law basically reclassified certain weapons.
Okay, then you go along with that?
I don't know if I go along with that or not.
Because that's the thing. As soon as you go along with that, what you are saying is it's okay for we the people to decide that there are some weapons that we just don't want running around loose in our society. We want them to be held in the hands of law enforcement and the military. And you know, we have, in my mind, already made that decision back in the 1930s. And if we've made that decision...
The gun banners will not... They like that one. They like the 1968 Gun Control Act. They like all the gun control... Basically, you have to draw a line of sand somewhere where you basically say, nope, sorry, no more gun control, because you've banned enough of them, you've reclassified enough of them, and you've harassed...
You know, I absolutely agree with you, number 12, and I think that line should be drawn on. If you can use it for hunting, it's fine, and if people routinely use it for hunting, and if it's a weapon of war, it's not fine. And this... I agree with you. This law does not draw that line as neatly as it should be. It should be revisited, and then it should be passed. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
NBC Tonight, a big night of Monday premieres, starting with an all-new Fear Factor Couples.
I can't do it!
Then, the hottest show on TV is back, Las Vegas. A soldier home from war drops the biggest bombshell of all.
Will you marry me?
Finally, the series premiere of LAX, the stories we never hear from the place we all know.
Welcome to the United States. So, where are you hiding the drugs?
Heather Locklear, Blair Underwood, LAX, following Fear Factor Couples in the premiere of Las Vegas, NBC Tonight.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. We've all heard the phrase, use it or lose it. Well, according to a study just published in the journal Neurology, people with mentally challenging work seem to be less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than those working in physically demanding jobs. Researchers suggest lifelong stimulus maintains a reserve of brain cells and strengthens connections between neurons.
Billionaires for both.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Give a small child a knife, and the poor tyke is likely to chop off a finger. But in the hands of a master chef, that knife is a tool for creating a sumptuous feast. It's the same thing with money. Give money to poor people, and they'll probably squander it on foolish indulgences like aluminum siding or medicine or food. But if you put money in our hands, in the hands of people who have been around money all our lives, we're going to build empires and buy elections and develop weapon systems and suppress dissent and spread the blessing that is the essence of what America is all about. Unbridled corporate freedom all over the world. I'm Zena Fogue for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It was a slow day, and the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road.
And welcome back. Yeah, the soldiers by the side of the road taking a really, really hard time. Violent demonstrators ransacked and burned at least four United Nations office compounds today. Where? In Afghanistan. We're down to two. We control two cities in Afghanistan. We've lost six cities in Iraq so far. What a mess. What an absolute mess. But let's get back to gun control here. Today is the day that the assault weapons ban expires. And apparently a few folks a little concerned about that. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number on line 2, Jarmila in Eureka, California, is on. Hey, Jarmila, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. I just want to ask you something. Last night, about 1 o'clock in the morning, I was listening to KGO, and they said because of casualties in Iraq being on the rise, legislation was introduced in Congress that would revive the draft. Did you hear anything about it?
Well, there's been legislation introduced several times this in the last 2 years to revive the draft. Charlie Rangel is pushing this thing. It's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to get out of committee before the election. But I can virtually assure you that after the election, if George W. Bush gets reelected or gets elected, you will see a draft. I mean, they just have no choice. They just have no choice. If John Kerry is elected, 50-50 chance. Depends on the policy that he decides to pursue in the Middle East. So, but whatever was introduced isn't going to go anywhere. Thanks for the call, Jarmila. I appreciate it. It's always nice to be able to know the answer to a question here. 1-866-889-8894, line 1. Mike in St. Louis, a listener to Cable Radio Network. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hi. I just wanted to comment. I didn't catch the beginning of your exchange about the assault weapons ban. Obviously, you're in favor of continuing the ban. That's correct, right?
Well, more or less. I'm in favor of starting from scratch, frankly. As I said before, I think that any weapon that can be used for hunting, typically, routinely, and we all agree is fair, should not be banned. And those weapons that are designed specifically for military applications should be tightly regulated. I think that they should be available to people on rifle ranges and things for fun. You know, they can rent them, in that one particular place and not take them home. But I'm not a total anti-gun nut. I'm not one of these people who says people shouldn't be allowed to have guns in their homes or things like that. I do think that it's a good idea to require manufacturers to put locks on, child safety proof locks on guns. And several manufacturers are doing that voluntarily right now.
Right, right. So what exactly, I mean, obviously the 1994 assault weapons ban wasn't very effective anyway. You would agree with that, right?
By and large, yeah.
Right, because you do know that we can get into arcane arguments about, lugs for bayonets and, lugs for grenade launchers and so forth and so on, but that really is a non-issue. You would agree
with
that, right?
Well, the NRA is saying those things are cosmetic. I would say those are the things that transform it into a military weapon. In either case,
right.
I don't see any reason why.
The next generation,
a duck hunter doesn't need them.
Right, and the next generation, right, and it doesn't really make any difference as far as the deadly.
And I don't know why a duck hunter needs a 100-clip or a 50-clip, banana.
I was going to get to that.
50-shot clip.
The next generation military rifle will not be able to fix a bayonet. That's the XM8 that the Army's coming out with. But, so
yeah, that's because they don't do close-in combat anymore anyway.
Right, exactly. And the grenade launcher issue is for a rifle grenade, which is a type of grenade that would be launched with a blank cartridge by using an adapter, and the grenade goes on the end of the barrel. They haven't used those in 50 years. They haven't used them in 50 years.
But you can still buy them.
Do what?
They're still out there.
Well, they're regulated as any other weapon.
Yeah, I know. I believe they're illegal, but there are devices, and they are used in other countries that can where you use the bullet to fire the grenade, basically. You
know, a blank cartridge, not a bullet, but a blank cartridge.
A blank.
It's used to propel it at the end of the barrel. Right.
Right. Okay.
But the 1934 Firearms Act regulated fully automatic, what's commonly called machine guns, as you're probably aware, along with a number of other firearms, such as short-barreled rifles.
Yeah. Got to ask you to make your point in 5 seconds here,
okay.
Mike.
Well,
can you quickly summarize?
Ban high-capacity magazines. That's really the point. So
yeah.
I need a whole bunch of do about nothing.
Well, I think it's a whole bunch of ado about something that we really need to have some more ado about and figure out what we as a society want to have here. But the high-capacity magazines are the big problem. And I agree with you. The assault weapon ban did not effectively ban them because of the grandfathering clauses. 29 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you. Thanks for the call. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The world's only unionized Walmart will remain that way after the Quebec Labor Relations Commission rejected the company's challenge. The Walmart located north of Quebec City became the first ever unionized store early last month. The chain argued to the commission that the bargaining unit certified at the store was not valid because it did not include store management personnel. Walmart could still file an appeal, but the United Food and Commercial Workers Union issued a statement this weekend saying they hope that the company will stop stalling and begin contract negotiations. More than half of the employees at the store signed on to enter the union, but the UFCW claims Walmart is trying to extend the list to management in an attempt to reduce support.
Frank Quattrone, the man behind a dot-com bomb, is being sent behind bars. On Wednesday, a federal judge convicted Quattrone of witness tampering and two counts of obstruction of justice. He's charged with instructing employees to destroy incriminating emails during the federal government's investigation of Credit Suisse First Boston's technology group. He's sentenced to 18 months and fined $90,000. Small change for a man worth at least $76 million.
The world's four largest coffee suppliers are aiming to improve conditions in growing countries, but critics are saying it's the wrong tactic. Nestle, Tachibo, Sara Lee, and Kraft have all signed a pact intended to end the use of child labor, forced labor, and to prevent the use of dangerous pesticides. The pact is a voluntary commitment by the four companies to address complaints by consumers and environmental groups that say coffee companies exploit low prices and poor working conditions in a world market with an excess of coffee. Critics of the new pact are arguing that the companies would be more helpful if they cut oversupply in an attempt to lift world prices that have been at a 30-year low since 2002.
Volkswagen is bugging its German workers to give up wages and benefits or face 30,000 layoffs. VW is the latest player across German manufacturing industries like Daimler, Chrysler, and Siemens to demand give-backs. VW's restructuring plan would require employees to forego wage increases for 2 years in an effort to cut more than $2 billion in production costs. The German Metalworkers Union has denounced the wage freeze and is demanding a 4% increase and job protections. Labor contract negotiations begin this week. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Department of Labor show less than expected numbers of Americans applying for first-time unemployment claims per week. Wall Street analysts had predicted new applicants to reach 346,000, but the DOL's figures placed the actual number close to 319,000. It was the sharpest weekly decline since December 2001. However, the drop in claims following Hurricane Charley is reflected in the statistic. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The assault weapon ban expires today. Does it mean we're about to see an explosion of maniacal gun shooting, kids blowing up schools all over? Or does it mean no big deal, nothing, not much is going to go on? Or, you know, does it mean that an issue has... Why is it that there is so much passion about the assault weapons ban, which has to do with the Second Amendment, and not so much passion, not an equal amount of passion about the defending the First Amendment with, against these free speech zones that George Bush is putting up wherever he speaks? Could it have to do with the fact that gun rights groups have contributed more than $17 million in individual PAC and soft money contributions to federal candidates and party committees since 1989? Nearly $15 million, or 85% of it, has gone to Republicans. The NRA alone, $14 million over the past 15 years. On the other side, gun control advocates have, in that period of time, since 1989, come up with only $1.7 million for lobbying. Interestingly, 94% of that went to Democrats. This seems to be an issue that's cleaving along party lines. Now, in addition to the direct money contributions and, you know, PACs and, you know, just cash that were given to politicians, the NRA also spent between 97 and 2003 $11 million lobbying elected and gun officials and government officials, excuse me. And the Gun Owners of America spent more than $18 million in lobbying. By contrast, in the same period of time, the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence spent less than $500,000, and the Brady Campaign only was able to raise $2 million. Could that have something to do with it? Since 1989, the NRA has spent more than $22 million on communication costs and independent expenditures, with more than $18 million spent in support of Republican candidates. That's sending out newsletters and things. And people think, by the way, that the NRA is just a membership organization for us hunters. That the NRA is a trade association for the weapons industry. A trade association for the weapons industry that just happens to call itself a membership organization and makes good use of those members. It's one of the slickest things the gun manufacturers ever did. Absolutely ever did. Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service. I know we've got a few other callers here on the line. Ken, Diane, Scott, hang on the line. We'll take your calls in just a minute. But Victoria's on with our update for the day from Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Hey. Well, let's see, what's up? Well, people are sort of getting ready to brazen out the next hurricane, which people expect is going to hit us, and everyone gets so excited about it now after last year with Isabel and getting hit by that, that every time it rains, people go out and start buying emergency supplies. So
I'm waiting for the very, very religious right-wingers to start saying, let's see, they've hit Florida three times. This must be, God is angry about 2000, or, you know, warning us about what Jeb is trying to pull for 2004, or trying to get our attention to notice global warming, which increases the ferocity and frequency of hurricanes.
You know, it could be all of the above.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of any of those.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, that's very disturbing.
Pass the word along.
Equally disturbing, however, is the hearing tomorrow. Well, it may be disturbing. It's hard to tell, but it may be. The hearing tomorrow for the confirmation of Porter Goss to be the head of the CIA, a job that basically, as he takes it on, is ill-defined. We don't know exactly what he'll be doing, who he'll be reporting to, whether directly to the president or whether to a national intelligence director who is increasingly being called a NID, which I have to say sounds really silly, but that's what they're calling him rather than NID. It's being called a NID.
Right.
So
well,
we don't know what the job is that Goss is going to be doing. And he's getting bipartisan support. I mean, for example, Senator Bob Graham of the very wet state of Florida. His co-chair is a huge supporter of his, and yet there are others who are saying, no, he's a partisan hack, and he's the last person who we need in that job. So as you and I talked about last week, I think there will be some quite lively, really quite lively hearings going on tomorrow.
Yeah, but when all is said and done, he's going to get it.
Yeah, all said and done, he's going to get it, unless something really weird comes out, and it's not going to.
Victoria,
so, yeah, he's got the gig. He's got the gig.
Yeah, he's got the gig. What's the buzz in Washington? He's just got to do the dance first. What's the buzz in Washington, D.C. about the assault weapons ban expiring today?
Well, there's been an interesting press conference in Bethesda, which is the area where I live, where Suburban Hospital has one of the major trauma centers of the country. Some of their trauma surgeons, who really handle an awful lot of very serious stuff, have been talking about the damage, the internal damage done by these things, and urging for keeping the ban. Of course, that is falling on deaf ears. Basically, the word seems to be in Washington, let's all pretend it's not happening.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to take a stand on it. Certainly the Democrats at the moment, with the exception of Senator Schumer, Feinstein, and a few others.
And Senator Kerry. And Senator Kerry.
Right.
I mean, he brought it up on the campaign trail day before yesterday. I mean, it's either politically brilliant or suicide, one or the other, but he brought it up.
He brought it up. But by and large, they're avoiding it. They are avoiding it, and so it looks like it'll just happen, and then everybody will be very glad it's Tuesday, and they can go on and talk about something else.
Yeah, okay.
The other thing that went on today, I attended a hearing in the Senate, Secretary of State Powell and Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge were testifying, talking about the need for the National Insurance, I don't know why I'm calling him that, National Intelligence Director, clearly a job I will never get, and talking about the importance not only of clear lines of demarcation and of the importance of the ability to communicate, but really hearing from the senators how very much on board they seemed to be to get some kind of legislation written before they do break, and serious legislation, and their confidence that they'll not only get it written, but that they'll get it passed, that it'll get through the House, and that it'll get past the House-Senate conference. So that was interesting to me, that they really were very confident of that.
Yeah. Well, the Republicans want to look like they're doing something about this. They really don't want America to remember that 9/11 happened on George Bush's watch, that Dick Cheney was responsible for the counterterrorism committee, a special committee on counterterrorism that never met until after 9/11. His energy task force, his energy task force met six times, Ken Lay and all these other guys, but his counterterrorism task force met zero, zip, nada, niet, not at all. And, they really want us to forget that this thing happened on their watch because they were snoozing. They were absolutely snoozing.
Yeah.
And I'm just amazed the Democrats haven't been bringing it up. I mean, flip it around. Think how the Republicans would deal with this if this had happened on Bill Clinton's watch. They would be taking him apart.
That's right. And this really goes to, it seems to me anyway, just observing this as one of the key differences. The Republicans have a message. They stay on it. They hammer away at it. They know what they want. They want to keep their jobs. They want the White House.
Yeah.
And the Democrats kind of want it, but kind of don't know how they're going
to
get it.
Well, but they also want democracy, and they also want, rational conversation, and they want the people to be well-informed.
Yes, conversation. Nobody wants conversation. I don't want conversation.
Well, you know what I mean. I mean discourse, dialogue, political.
That's the phrase they're using. You're right. Yes.
Yeah. Good one. Victoria.
No, it's complicated, and there is certainly a sense in Washington, D.C. that right now things are looking very bleak for the Democrats.
Yeah. Well, there's still time to turn it around.
There's still time.
Let's hope.
Indeed.
Victoria, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Always great to hear from you. Have a great day there.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. Bye now. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go to line 3. Ken in Warren, Michigan on the line. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hello.
Hey, Ken, thanks for so patiently waiting. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. I'm 24 years in the military, two branches, Army and Air Force, and I fired those, the F-16 and other assault weapons. And my way of thinking, any weapon that you can fire 100 rounds through in a blink of an eye should be considered as a weapon of mass destruction, because that's exactly what you're going to do with it.
What about 100 rounds in about 8 seconds?
That's what I'm saying.
Because a semi-automatic weapon, you can put about 50 rounds through a semi-automatic weapon in about 8 seconds. And you can, in, on full automatic, it's about 2 seconds. And the NRA's position is, well, if you put it on semi-automatic, then problem solved.
Well, it should be considered a weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what happens with that weapon. You use it, and whoever's on the receiving end, if they're hit dead on, they're cut in half.
Ken, what possible reason do you think that the gun lobby would have for wanting to say, listen, we should continue to allow 50-shot clips, 50 clips that will hold 50 rounds
of magazines?
Yeah.
I have no idea, because there's no way you could use it for hunting. Whatever, if you shot a deer with it, it would be turned into hamburger.
Well, you know, that might be desirable.
There'd be nothing left of it for any reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it's not a weapon that you use for hunting.
What about the argument that there's some guys who, you know, maybe have a small apparatus and it makes them feel more manly? I mean, shouldn't they be allowed to have one?
I would say if you want to use it on a gun range and you want to practice, you want to feel macho on a gun range, fine.
Yeah.
Who cares? As long as the weapon's regulated there, you're not taken off the gun range.
Yeah, it doesn't seem kind of strange that you've got to get a license and prove your proficiency to drive a car but not to own a weapon in most states, or in many states.
It really is.
Yeah. Okay. Ken, thanks.
You don't have to prove anything to own a weapon.
Yeah, well, it depends on where you live. But, Ken, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And thanks for hanging on there. 1-866-889-8894. Let's go to Santa Fe. Diane is on line, too. Hey, Diane, what's up?
Hello, Tom.
Yeah.
I just wanted to complete the quote that you used in your first hour, my country, right or wrong.
Right.
We rarely hear the rest of it. My country, right or wrong, when right to be kept right, when wrong to be put right. I think that's so important. I had it on my refrigerator during the Vietnam War, and I took it back out again when we attacked Iraq.
That's interesting.
I think
what's
this country right.
Diane, what's the original source of that quote?
Carl Schurz, S-C-H-U-R-Z. He was a political leader, American political leader. He was born in Germany, but emigrated to this country and was involved with politics.
When?
In the 1800s.
Uh-huh.
He was born in 1829.
Oh, that's interesting. So this has been around for a while. And you know, what it illustrates is, and this is, again, here's the soundbite that I'm just amazed the Democrats are not using. It takes courage to stand up, to volunteer to stand up to defend your country. And it requires even more courage to particularly in time of war, and it requires even more courage to stand up to your country when you believe it's wrong, particularly a time of war. And John Kerry did both, and George Bush did neither.
Very well put, yes. I agree. Tom, thank you so much for your program.
Well, thank you very much for calling, Diane. I appreciate
welcome.
It. Good hearing from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And line one is toast there, eh? Okay. Here we are. The lines are open. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Scott, if you want to call back, I guess we accidentally dropped you. Anyhow, here we are, Gun Owners of America, spending all this money. What should be done? What do you think should be done about this? I think that it's very simple and very straightforward, that we should say, number one, if you want to own something that can kill somebody from a distance of greater than the reach of your arm, well, I suppose you could argue the throwable knife fits into that category, but let's say by mechanical action. See, I think crossbows fit into this category as well. I remember, I forget which pope it was, Pope Pius, I think, in 10-something, issued this historical, you know, the world is going to end, the ultimate weapon has been created. He was talking about the crossbow. But anyhow, if you want to own a weapon that uses mechanical means to kill people at a distance, the sort of thing that allows killing to happen without the intimate contact, that frankly makes it difficult, I think, for a lot. I think that if those guys in Columbine had to actually walk up and stick knives in people, they wouldn't have done it. There's something very sanitary about moving your finger a quarter of an inch and 50 feet away or 10 feet away, somebody blows up. Something very sanitary about it. And I believe that if you want to own a weapon that can cause death at a remote distance, that you at the very least should demonstrate that you are not mentally ill, you are not an enemy of the state. Now, there's a tough one for you. Are they going to allow Democrats to have guns? Dick Cheney wouldn't, right? Anyhow, that you're not actively engaged in some sort of a program to try to overthrow we the people, and that you have some proficiency with this, and that you're an adult, that you can make rational decisions. You know, this is just very straightforward. These are the rules for driving a car. What's wrong with having those be the rules for owning a gun? I don't get it. I don't see why that's a problem. Number one, and number two, if a weapon is capable, is not primarily designed for hunting, then, and if it's a weapon that shoots bullets, then that weapon can be licensed for use on firing ranges and things, and in Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, but it's not something that the general public can own. Nor would we want to. I mean, these are the positions that chiefs of police across the United States are taking, by the way. These are the positions that the cops who are being shot at are taking. And it's just very simple, very straightforward. And let's understand the genesis of the Second Amendment. That these guys, that the founders, when they put this country together, were very worried about the power of a standing army. They did not want there to be a standing army during peacetime. It's the same reason that they took the authority to declare war away from the president. They thought this is a very dangerous thing. We don't want a standing army. We don't want a military coup here like Libya had with Gaddafi, like Pakistan had with Sharif. Over and over and over again, it happened in Egypt. Over and over and over again, it's happened. They didn't want it to happen here. And so they said, let's not have an army. Instead, we'll have citizens' militias, and everyone will have a gun and be a member of the militia. And then, after the Second Amendment got passed, the citizens' militias fell apart. We ended up with a standing army, and now we've got this vestige left over in the Second Amendment. Let's wake up and come into the modern day.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Tiny pieces of plastic cover much of the oceans, and they fill the stomachs of some animals that live there. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of plastic trash ends up floating in the oceans, and it slowly breaks down into tiny fragments that some animals eat by mistake. The results can range from indigestion to poisoning. Charles Moore studies the effects of plastic in the oceans and where it's concentrated. Moore founded the Alcalita Marine Research Foundation in California to do this kind of research. In some places at sea, Moore says there is more plastic than there is natural food. Moore says this is a huge problem for marine animals. Plastic comes in virtually any shape and color, and a lot of it looks like natural food to hungry animals.
Just about any food you can imagine has a plastic mimic. So all kinds of marine animals are eating plastic.
Moore says animals that eat the plastic sometimes end up with digestion problems. In addition, they can become weak since they filled their stomachs with junk that gives them no energy. He says the worst problem is that the plastic can lead to poisoning.
Plastic is a sponge for oily pollutants, DDTs, PCBs. These bits of plastic are catching these pollutants and moving them into animals. So it's sort of like where a fish wouldn't necessarily have eaten a pollutant, if you put it on a piece of plastic that looks like food and then the fish will eat it, you're creating a vector for transmitting pollutants in the ocean.
Moore says toxins from the tiniest scraps of plastic can slowly move up the food chain. That's because pollutants that stick to the plastic accumulate in the tissues of animals, and those body burdens are passed on as smaller animals are eaten by larger ones. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Palmets, palmets, moonlight's fading on a midnight day.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from New York City. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Kate in Arcata, California, on line two. Hey, Kate, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'd like you to comment on some of the thoughts that I'm having about gun control.
Sure.
Although I've always been opposed to it, et cetera, a thought that I'm having is if the government becomes more, or let's say less, we the people, and more fascistic, which is what we've been talking about a lot,
mm-hmm.
What if our government, which is not we the people as much anymore, begins to do to dissidents in this country what we're doing to dissidents, insurgents in Iraq? Wouldn't we want to be armed like they are?
No.
Okay, that's what I want to hear you talk about.
Let me give you two reasons why.
Okay.
The first is because it would just lead to the death of an unnecessary death of a lot of people, because the reality is that you cannot fight modern weaponry with handguns and rifles. You just can't.
What
do
about
it.
Rocket-propelled grenades?
Well, you know, again, nobody is talking about making rocket-propelled grenades legal. Nobody.
Oh, okay, so
nobody.
What we're talking about is the automatic weapons,
Right. What I'm saying is that their logic, you know, you should apply. If you're really going to follow their logic, then rocket-propelled grenades should be legal. And I disagree with their logic, and that's the fallacy of their logic. Say, but number one, we shouldn't allow these. An uprising of the citizens against the government within the United States would not work because the government. I mean, look what happened to the Branch Davidians. They had hundreds and hundreds of machine guns sitting there. I mean, you know, you just come in with Apache helicopters and tanks, and boom, that's it, you're toast. And in the meantime, a lot of people unnecessarily die. It's happening all over the world as when people try to revolt against their governments, and the governments are well-armed. And our government is the best well-armed in the world. So number one, it wouldn't work. And number two, the other reason why it would be a mistake to try and do armed revolt against the United States if the United States became fascistic is because history tells us that those movements that are most likely to, number one, succeed, and number two, over the long term, produce democracy are essentially peaceful movements. Whether it was in South Africa, I mean, by and large, that you know, in India, what Gandhi did, that peaceful movements, peaceful nonviolence, particularly in America, where it would really resonate, peaceful nonviolence is, in my opinion, what it would take to turn the tide of government, of overwhelming government response. And that's what happened. That's how we stopped the Vietnam War. Wasn't anybody
Great.
Shooting? It was
yeah.
it was nonviolent, peaceful resistance, protests and things like that. And that's what I think has, and that's how we got the vote for women in the United States. It's how blacks got, you know, civil rights to the extent that they have them in the United States, and on and on. And that's the and having a lot of weapons would just distract us from that, frankly. I think so. You know, here I am a radical, but that's my position. Thanks
Me
for the
too.
Call.
Thanks,
I appreciate it, Kate.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The world's only unionized Walmart will remain that way after the Quebec Labor Relations Commission rejected the company's challenge. The Walmart located north of Quebec City became the first ever unionized store early last month. The chain argued to the commission that the bargaining unit certified at the store was not valid because it did not include store management personnel. Walmart could still file an appeal, but the United Food and Commercial Workers Union issued a statement this weekend saying they hope that the company will stop stalling and begin contract negotiations. More than half of the employees at the store signed on to enter the union, but the UFCW claims Walmart is trying to extend the list to management in an attempt to reduce support.
Frank Quattrone, the man behind a dot-com bomb, is being sent behind bars. On Wednesday, a federal judge convicted Quattrone of witness tampering and two counts of obstruction of justice. He's charged with instructing employees to destroy incriminating emails during the federal government's investigation of Credit Suisse First Boston's technology group. He's sentenced to 18 months and fined $90,000. Small change for a man worth at least $76 million.
The world's four largest coffee suppliers are aiming to improve conditions in growing countries, but critics are saying it's the wrong tactic. Nestle, Tochibo, Sara Lee, and Kraft have all signed a pact intended to end the use of child labor, forced labor, and to prevent the use of dangerous pesticides. The pact is a voluntary commitment by the four companies to address complaints by consumers and environmental groups that say coffee companies exploit low prices and poor working conditions in a world market with an excess of coffee. Critics of the new pact are arguing that the companies would be more helpful if they cut oversupply in an attempt to lift world prices that have been at a 30-year low since 2002.
Volkswagen is bugging its German workers to give up wages and benefits or face 30,000 layoffs. VW is the latest player across German manufacturing industries like Daimler, Chrysler, and Siemens to demand givebacks. VW's restructuring plan would require employees to forego wage increases for 2 years in an effort to cut more than $2 billion in production costs. The German Metal Workers Union has denounced the wage freeze and is demanding a 4% increase and job protections. Labor contract negotiations begin this week. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Department of Labor show less than expected numbers of Americans applying for first-time unemployment claims per week. Wall Street analysts had predicted new applicants to reach 346,000, but the DOL's figures placed the actual number close to 319,000. It was the sharpest weekly decline since December 2001. However, the drop in claims following Hurricane Charley is reflected in the statistic. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I don't think that President Bush is a Republican. The root of the Republican conservative movement is conservation. I mean, that's what a conservative does. He conserves the clean air, the clean water, these natural resources. They belong to the public. And he is squandering those resources on his corporate buddies. I'm a Republican. I have conservative values, and I cannot see four more years of that kind of leadership.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Did you take full and proper notice of the political coming out of George W.'s twin daughters? Jenna and Barbara, the 22-year-old twins, have long been kept away from the political glare, but they're now adults who have just graduated from college, and both have been brought into the limelight by the Bush political campaign. Their first outing was for a photo spread and puff piece that ran in Vogue, the fashion magazine. Indeed, they looked splendiferous, beautifully made up and swathed in glamorous designer gowns, one by Oscar de la Renta and the other by Calvin Klein. No telling how many silkworms toiled to make this photo spread possible. But, tacky me, I couldn't help thinking as I viewed the photos, why aren't they in fatigues and Kevlar vests like other women and men their age? Jenna and Barbara announced that they would be joining their daddy's election campaign. But I had to ask myself, why aren't they joining their daddy's war? After all, he says that his war in Iraq is absolutely essential to our national security. And he insists that his policies over there are absolutely worth the troops who have been killed, worth the horrible mutilations of thousands of other soldiers, worth the horrific beheadings, worth the untold illnesses and poisonings being contracted by the men and women he has sent there, and worth the illegal conscription of tens of thousands of Americans forced to stay in this disastrous war beyond their legitimate tour of duty. So, if Daddy's war is absolutely worth the sacrifice of America's workaday families, why is it not worth the enlistment of his military-age family? This is Jim Hightower saying, maybe it's genetic. After all, George himself was a ferocious war hawk who used family connections to keep himself 8,000 miles from Vietnam. And now that he's president, he can start his own war that leaves his loved ones safely swathed in silk, while our families see our loved ones come home in shrouds.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from Manhattan, New York City, here from the Sirius Satellite Radio System Studios, 1-866-889. That's right, 1-866-889.
889-8894, our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, our website. If you'd like to drop by, drop into the chat room, or you know, browse the... One of my favorite links on TomHartmann.com is articles on democracy. You might find that fascinating. There's all the stuff that I've published on Common Dreams in the last couple of years. So much happening in the world. The situation in Baghdad seemingly in an endlessly descending spiral. This, of course, because the idea of nationalism is something that you can't squash with bombs or guns. The situation in Afghanistan is melting down. We'll get to that in a little bit. Interesting stuff with George Bush and his former Harvard Business School professor. We'll take on that in just a moment, too. Let's go to the phone lines first, though. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Jeff in Denver, Colorado, on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Responding to the caller talking about an armed citizenry being
in the last hour, yeah.
Yeah, responding, yeah, being able to...
Let me just set this up, because some folks, just tuned in. In the last hour, we were talking about the gun control, the weapons assault ban, the assault weapons ban, rather, expiring today. Congress basically doing nothing about it. We had heard a report earlier from Victoria Jones saying that in Congress, the Republicans don't want to do anything about it because they don't want to upset the NRA. The Democrats don't want to do anything about it because they're afraid of upsetting people who are in the NRA. And everybody, except John Kerry, who spoke out on the issue, I think very courageously, has just kind of decided to let this thing pass. And Bush is trying to have it both ways. He's trying to say, oh, I'm opposed to it, or I'm in favor of it being renewed. In other words, I'm opposed to assault weapons and want to keep the assault. But I'm not going to do anything to make it happen. You know, it's sort of like I'm in favor of working, but I'm not going to show up for work, right? So that's Bush's official position. So you were saying, Jeff.
And the one caller called up and said, well, what about the citizenry protecting themselves from a corrupt government?
Right. Don't we need guns to have in case our government gets so bizarre that we need to take it back by force? Yeah.
Yes. Well, we have hundreds of examples around the world. Look at all the peaceful countries where we have with democratic governments where we have very few weapons, Japan, Costa Rica, place like that. And then look at the
England.
Most heavily armed countries in the world, heavily armed in respect to the citizens having guns, Iraq and Afghanistan. Iraq had a dictator while the citizens were some of the most heavily armed on the planet.
Yeah.
And the dictator was slaughtering the citizens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you look what, when we don't have guns, we tend to work things out by other means. When the people have guns, such as in the Congo, such as in Somalia, when there are problems, they don't work them out as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely making my point, Jeff, and making it more eloquently than I did, in fact. Thank you. Well said. And that's why I think that, you know, this whole argument that the Second Amendment was written so that if the government ever became repressive, then the citizens could rise up against it the way they did against England is specious. It's a phony argument.
Yeah.
First of all, it's not what the founders had in mind. They were trying to prevent a standing army. They wanted to have citizens' militias. They wanted to have an army like Switzerland has. And secondly, it wouldn't work. You know, it's not practical. I mean, it's a phony argument.
It didn't protect the people in Afghanistan from the Taliban. It did not protect the people in Iraq from Saddam.
No, if anything, what it did was it allowed those who had thrown in with Saddam and those who had thrown in with the Taliban to be even more dangerous to their neighbors.
Yes.
Yeah. It allowed the perpetuation of terror. Jeff, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. President George Bush's former Harvard Business School professor has some interesting comments about his ex-student. This from the Daily News, the New York Daily News, article by Corky Samazgo. The title really says it all. W for war, but eager to avoid it, professor recalls. Yoshi Tsumori said yesterday that George Bush had told him, Bush was a student of his, by the way, at Harvard Business School. And this was when he was supposed to be on duty with the Boston National Guard, Air National Guard, to complete his six-year stint. And he never showed up there either. Although then he didn't actually have to show up on the weekends. All he had to do was just sign in, which he never did. And Sumuri says, what really disturbed me is that he said he was for the Vietnam War. I said, George, that's hypocrisy. You won't fight a war, but you support that you support, but you expect other people to fight it with you? He just smirked. This is what his professor says. He smirked. He describes Bush as a mediocre student who, quote, believed people were poor because they were lazy, end quote. And Bush, according to Samuri, had, quote, no sense of guilt, end quote, about getting into the Guard while others wound up fighting in Vietnam. In fact, here's the professor's actual words. He was very casual about it. I said, lucky you. How did you manage? He said, my dad had a good friend who put me at the head of the waiting list. The White House declined to comment on Samuri's recollections, but Bush has denied that his father, who was a congressman at the time, pulled strings to get him the much sought-after berth in the Guard. Don't you find it fascinating that the core of the 60 Minutes story last week was that they finally got Ben Barnes, the guy who was the Speaker of the House of the state of Texas, to come out on national television and say, yes, I was the guy who, at the second-hand request of George Herbert Walker Bush, got George W. Bush into the Texas Air National Guard, jumped him ahead of hundreds of other, well-qualified but less well-connected, less wealthy applicants, so that they didn't have to go to Vietnam. I did it. And I feel bad about it, he said. He said his change of heart came when he went to Washington, D.C. and visited the Vietnam War Memorial. And walking through that Vietnam War Memorial and seeing the names inscribed of the dead there just flipped him out. He was like, I wonder how many of those people died in place of the wealthy sons of privilege that I got on that list because their parents had connections. And now we're finding the U.S. News and World Report. I mean, this just keeps on coming. And again, here's where this is relevant. And this is the argument, by the way, that the Swift Boat veterans were making, too. The Swift Boat veterans folks were making the argument that it's not about whether or not John Kerry actually deserved the medals he got, but whether or not today he's lying about it. And they of course, contend that he is, that he's saying that he served honorably when, in fact, they say he didn't. And, you know, history will decide that 100%, well, with the exception of one guy, I guess, eight of the nine guys who served on the boat with him, who actually were physically there with him, plus the guy from another boat whose life he saved when he got thrown overboard, and Kerry pulled him out of the water, all agree that in each one of the cases, for each one of the five medals he won, that he won them in heroic circumstances. And, they're all there with him. So now that those claims have been discredited, the Swift Boats are on to, the guys are on to this new thing about, well, when he came back and he stood up against the war, he betrayed us. And they take his comments out of context. He had held some hearings in Detroit called the Winter Soldier hearings based on Thomas Paine's famous saying, "The summer soldier, now is the time to try men's souls, the summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will now, no doubt, shrink from the service of his country." So this was George W. Bush. "Will now, no doubt, shrink from the service of his country, but tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered." That was Thomas Paine's statement. So John Kerry, being a student of history and knowing that, said, I've been to Vietnam, and it looks to me like it's a war we can't win, and it's a war we shouldn't be fighting, and our young men and women are dying there for no good reason. And let's find out what's going on. And so he had over 150 people come to this hearing in Detroit, Vietnam veterans, and simply give testimony about what they saw and what they did. And they testified, and some of them testified, to having committed atrocities. Welcome to war. And these Swift Boat veterans, oh, we didn't commit atrocities. Well, maybe you didn't. There is no such thing as a war without atrocities. I'm sorry. That is the nature of the beast. You get young men out there with weapons that can kill it, at a distance, and one of their buddies that they've been through hell with and bonded with mightily gets killed right next to them, and they go nuts. Welcome to human nature. There is no such thing as a war without atrocities. But they'd like to pretend that there was. And so when John Kerry pointed out those atrocities and said, and in fact he pointed them out in the context of saying, not the guys in Vietnam are bad, but saying this is what Robert McNamara, the defense secretary, this is what Henry Kissinger, the secretary of state, this is what Richard Nixon, the president of the United States, are essentially forcing us to do. This is the situation that they have put us into. That we end up behaving like this because we're going crazy. We're under fire. We're in an untenable situation. It is not right that they do this to us. And when you read the transcripts or you listen to the transcripts of Kerry in context, you get it, that he never, ever attacked Vietnam veterans. He attacked the civilian authorities, those folks in the White House and the Pentagon, who cooked this war up. And going back to Lyndon Johnson, who first said, okay, let's go into Vietnam and make a big stand against communism to try and certify, to strengthen his anti-communist credentials, to make him immune from attack by the Republicans. Because back then it was whoever was the most anti-communist could win an election. Just like now, it's whoever's the most anti-terrorist, right? You gotta be against something. And that was what John Kerry was pointing out. So, anyhow, the point is, did John Kerry lie about what happened back then or not? Is he lying today about what happened back then or not? And I would say, you know, it sure is obvious to me that he's not. But the Swift Boat guys are trying to say that he did, and they're free to do that. Well, here's now the question: did George Bush lie about what he did back then? And has he consistently lied over the years? And it's turning out pretty clear that he did. And Ben Barnes coming on CBS News saying, yep, I got him in, I pulled strings, after George W. has said repeatedly to the press, repeatedly denied that his father had anything to do with getting him in, and yet he told his professor at Harvard, oh, my daddy pulled, here, what's the exact quote here? My daddy had a good friend who put me at the head of the waiting list, end quote. Well, that good friend was Ben Barnes. And so he's apparently still lying to us about this. But it goes even beyond that now. The new revelations U.S. News and World Report has dug up. These things are being laid out for us to check out. And I think you'd be very interested in this. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from New York City. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to get your thoughts in on all of this or anything else, any other topics of the day. Give us a show. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
NBC Tonight, a big night of Monday premieres, starting with an all-new Fear Factor Couples.
I can't do it!
Then, the hottest show on TV is back, Las Vegas. A soldier home from war drops the biggest bombshell of all.
Will you marry me?
Finally, the series premiere of LAX, the stories we never hear from the place we all know.
Welcome to the United States. So, where are you hiding the drugs?
Heather Locklear, Blair Underwood, LAX, following Fear Factor Couples in the premiere of Las Vegas, NBC Tonight.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions. Restrictions that can be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Hello, Mama. It's me, old Summer. I guess you're worrying, wondering where I've been staying.
Oh, I don't think so. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Rick in Huntington, West Virginia on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program. Oh, I'm sorry. Rick is on line one, Rama. Okay, put the line two on hold and give me line one. Hey, Rick.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah.
Tom, hey, I was listening to you before the break, and I think everything you're saying is right on target. One thing I didn't hear you say was that, you know, Bush was for the Vietnam War. He was for fighting the war.
Just not him.
Just not him, as long as he could get out of it.
And yeah, that's the thing that grates me, is the hypocrisy. Cheney was in favor of the war, and he says now he had other things to do. He had five student deferments. And
they were both in favor of the war. The other thing is, you know, Kerry did the right thing. He went over, he volunteered for the war, he saw it was wrong, he came back and tried to get it ended. But one of the big things he was trying to do when he came back was get the POWs out. That was one of the main things. And if you look at all those meetings and everything he conducted, that was one of the big things he was pushing for.
Yeah, him and John McCain.
Exactly. Well, no, this is when he came back from Vietnam originally. He was trying to, one of the big things he was pushing for was to get the war over so he could get the POWs out. And then when he went to the Senate, of course, him and McCain produced a bill and basically got the people out.
Oh, interesting. Well, I didn't realize that during that part of his anti-war activity was trying to stop the war and get the POWs back.
Yes, sir. If you go
Makes
back
sense.
And listen to those tapes, that's what a big part of it was about.
Hmm. Interesting.
And the other thing is, you know, what really makes me mad right now is if you watch the cable news networks, they're doing everything they can to discredit CBS. Now, you know as well as I do, CBS would never come out with something like that unless they were absolutely positive that it was true.
Yeah.
If it was something that they'd come out with on John Kerry, all these MSNBC and CNN and all these cable networks would be all over Kerry on it. But now it's like they're trying to pick and say that it's not true because it's something that's against Bush. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. And here I think this is the bigger issue, Rick, and that is that on that 60 Minutes show, they had an actual real live human being, the former Speaker of the House of the state of Texas, Roy Barnes, coming on and saying he had pulled the strings for George and made this whole thing happen. And then they had a couple of documents from a dead guy backing it up. And nobody's talking about the fact that a real human being, a real live living guy, actually made that testimony. It's like they have changed the subject to these phony documents, which were like a little tiny percentage of the overall report. They were really just kind of back up to the report. And yet they've managed to shift the focus of the media. Nobody in the media has even discussed the fact that the former Speaker of the House of Texas has come out and said, yes, I got George in, while George even today is denying that influence got him in.
That's exactly right. And you got the professor, you got all these people coming out. And look at all the play that these Swift Boat people got. They played them for 3 weeks. Every time you turn the TV and you saw the ads and you saw them, even after they had been proven that they were lying. And one more thing, and I know you're busy, you need to get off, but have you noticed, am I the only one that's noticed that there haven't been any terror threats since after Kerry was getting the bump in the polls and everything's been going Bush's way the last few weeks? There haven't been any terror threats?
Yeah, what a surprise. What a surprise. They've been playing that thing like a violin. What they're really terrified of is that anytime Kerry gets ahead, they get a little terrorized and the terror threat goes up.
As soon as things turn and start bouncing Kerry's way, you watch, we'll have another big terror threat.
Yeah. Yeah, they you're welcome. Thanks for the call, Rick. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And in Huntington, West Virginia there. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is they are playing the media and the American public like a violin. It's just incredible. Here, you get a 60 Minutes report coming out indicting the president for lying about how he got into the National Guard and why he got into the National Guard. And, a real person and a whole bunch of documents, and one of those documents everybody decides to go after and say, oh, it's faked. And so all of a sudden, the focus of the story shifts from, did Bush lie to get in, or about getting in, or did somebody fake the documents? As if it would make any difference. I mean, they could have done that same show without any documents at all. And of course, now the documents have been well authenticated. You're not going to hear that on the right-wing talk radio, but it's out there. It's pretty solid. So, but even if they weren't, I mean, let's talk about Roy Barnes, for goodness sake. It's 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The world's only unionized Walmart will remain that way after the Quebec Labor Relations Commission rejected the company's challenge. The Walmart located north of Quebec City became the first ever unionized store early last month. The chain argued to the commission that the bargaining unit certified at the store was not valid because it did not include store management personnel. Walmart could still file an appeal, but the United Food and Commercial Workers Union issued a statement this weekend saying they hope that the company will stop stalling and begin contract negotiations. More than half of the employees at the store signed on to enter the union, but the UFCW claims Walmart is trying to extend the list to management in an attempt to reduce support.
Frank Quattrone, the man behind a dot-com bomb, is being sent behind bars. On Wednesday, a federal judge convicted Quattrone of witness tampering and two counts of obstruction of justice. He's charged with instructing employees to destroy incriminating emails during the federal government's investigation of Credit Suisse First Boston's technology group. He's sentenced to 18 months and fined $90,000. Small change for a man worth at least $76 million.
The world's four largest coffee suppliers are aiming to improve conditions nations and growing countries, but critics are saying it's the wrong tactic. Nestle, Tachibo, Sara Lee, and Kraft have all signed a pact intended to end the use of child labor, forced labor, and to prevent the use of dangerous pesticides. The pact is a voluntary commitment by the four companies to address complaints by consumers and environmental groups that say coffee companies exploit low prices and poor working conditions in a world market with an excess of coffee. Critics of the new pact are arguing that the companies would be more helpful if they cut oversupply in an attempt to lift world prices that have been at a 30-year low since 2002.
Volkswagen is bugging its German workers to give up wages and benefits or face 30,000 layoffs. VW is the latest player across German manufacturing industries like Daimler, Chrysler, and Siemens to demand givebacks. VW's restructuring plan would require employees to forego wage increases for 2 years in an effort to cut more than $2 billion in production costs. The German Metalworkers Union has denounced the wage freeze and is demanding a 4% increase and job protections. Labor contract negotiations begin this week. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Department of Labor show less than expected numbers of Americans applying for first-time unemployment claims per week. Wall Street analysts had predicted new applicants to reach 346,000, but the DOL's figures placed the actual number close to 319,000. It was the sharpest weekly decline since December 2001. However, the drop in claims following Hurricane Charlie is reflected in the statistic. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Mama, it's hard to hide, 'cause you know I'm 6'5", in a land where the people are short. I just slip on a burka, head on down to Loya Jirga, poke around all day at the Sharia court.
1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Tom Hartman back here with you, 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Welcome back. And let's go to the phones here. We got a bunch of callers on this. I've got some more information here. The U.S. News and World Report. This thing is an absolute indictment of George W. Bush, saying that basically he has been lying all along and he's continuing to lie right now. Not what he did way back then, but he's lying right now about his military service. But we'll get to that in just a minute. First on line three, we've got Scott with an update from the Edwards rally. Hey, Scott, this is in Santa Fe, right?
That's right, Tom.
Hey, Scott, what's happening? I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I was good this morning, but now I feel even better. I actually got to shake Edward's hand and hear what he had to say about health care. But what I wanted to talk to you about, actually, because you're talking about the Swift vote, Vietnam record, and all that stuff, was that I was actually in line with two Vietnam vets, one who was over there as an advisor in 61, and another who was over there as like an evacuator in 75, 74. And they were both, we were having this very specific discussion about record keeping in the military. And the guy from 75 said that for some reason he had to get some records on when he was over there. I can't remember what that involved, but he was a pilot as well. And he was talking about, you know, getting a copy from Kansas and a copy from D.C., that they had extensive records on him, and he was part of a unit that was massive. And that, you know, when you're a pilot, they keep close tabs on how many hours you're flying and you know, how many hours you flew this week. There's a daily report from your commanding officer on essentially what you did that day. I mean, there's a lot of records out there. And we can't come up with anything but maybe a couple of pay stubs for GW. I mean,
What we've got are, did you see the, what was it, on Letterman, I think it was? They said, we've got the new photo of George W., and they give that headshot of him, you know, in the cockpit. And then they zoom out, and he's sitting in a... in one of these little things out in front of the supermarket that you put a nickel in, you know?
I guess the other thing I want to say, having been there in person with the media, you know, watching Edwards, I think when you're there in person, you actually see how, you know, quote-unquote on message these guys really are.
Yeah.
The first thing he talked about was you know, what planet is Bush living on, where he talks about making health care more available to more Americans, and cited a lot of the statistics that you were citing last week.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not making the media.
How many more millions of Americans, 5 million more Americans uninsured in the last 3 years?
Yeah. But it's not. Stuff is not making the media, Scott. I mean, that's the thing that boggles my mind. Is from all the reports that I've heard, I have not gone to hear Kerry or Edwards speak. They haven't come to Vermont, and I doubt they will. You know, we've got 600,000 people in the whole state, and we always overwhelmingly vote progressive, whatever that is. You know, so I doubt that they'll show up. But the point, and we only have one or two electoral votes or whatever it is, three, I guess. You've got one for your congressman and one for both senators. But everything I've been hearing from people who actually show up and hear these guys speak is that they are giving electrifying speeches. They're getting crowds of huge crowds, thousands and thousands of people. They're not creating free speech zones like the president and the vice president. They're not doing these highly scripted, things. And that they're very much on point, and they're really doing a great job. And I'm seeing no evidence of that whatsoever in the press, in the media.
I'll tell you one last quick thing. I know you got other callers, but in the handicapped parking right before you got up to the plaza where Edwards was speaking, there was this, right-wing clown with a big pickup truck. He had a couple of toilets in the back, in the bed of the pickup, with Flush the Johns, 2004.
Oh, geez.
And I know, really raising the level of political rhetoric in this country. I went over to him, and I said, what I really want is my commander-in-chief, I kind of lost it, I have to say, is a cokehead, drunken deserter, and a guy who deferred it five times because it wasn't on his list of things to do. And he just kind of, stood there.
Yeah, how do you respond to something like that?
Well, you know what? He actually didn't say anything. I had another Kerry supporter come over and say, you're not going to change his mind, relax and all this. I'm like, I'm beyond changing his mind. I just want to give him a piece of my mind.
Well, and the reality, too, is that he may not have cared because he might have just been there because the local RNC gave him $100 to show up. There's a lot of that going on.
I said to him, you know what? You're not in some barbed wire cage a half a mile down from where this guy is speaking. Good thing it's a Democratic, gathering.
Yeah, no, these guys plug full spectrum dominance into Google. These guys are everywhere. On our message board, we've got at least one clearly and essentially admittedly and I believe probably two or three people who are on the message board being paid by either right-wing think tanks or Republicans because every time anybody says anything positive about the Democrats, bang, there they are. Just like that. With all their talking points and things. And these guys, one of these guys has been in there for a year. And we took the board from public to private, and he just vanished. He vanished for about a month. And then, it went public again, and boom, he's back. And it's like, they don't pay you to do post to private boards. They only pay you to post to public boards.
And just really quickly, there was one last thing that we actually got to talk to there was an Associated Press photographer there, and I wanted to mention it to your listeners. There's a new film that's come out. I don't know if you talked about it or not, Tom. It's called Hijacking Catastrophe.
Yeah.
9/11 Fear and the Selling of.
I've heard good things about it. How do you get to see this thing?
Here's the cool thing about it. It's in Santa Fe. It's going to be opening on Friday for at least a week. It's a place called The Screen at the College of Santa Fe, and they'll have ads and all that stuff. The cool thing about it, just to arm yourself with some information, the really cool thing about it is if you go to hijackingcatastrophe.org, you can buy either VHS or DVD copy for $20, and you then have distribution rights. They're not going to deal with all Miramax Disney crap. You can actually go right out there and show it at your library. Show it to a few friends on your DVD player.
That's great. Scott, thanks for the information. Got to move along, but that's great information. Hijackingcatastrophe.org. We'll pass it along. In fact, I just did. And we'll continue to throughout the week as time goes on. In fact, if I fail to or if I forget to over the next couple of days, remind me one more time in a different hour of the segment, because different stations pick up different hours of the show. And we reach a broader spectrum of folks. I appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. Joel and Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Joel, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Line two, I'm sorry. Joel is on line two. Rama. Joel?
Hello?
Yeah, hey, yeah. Joel.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
Yeah, I just want to get back to the Second Amendment thing. The thing that strikes me about the whole debate is that people take it out of context. If you read the Second Amendment, it says a well-regulated militia being necessary for the defense of the state, so on and so forth.
Right.
That Congress will not pass laws. The thing about it is people assume that people are supposed to be independent. Let me get this straight here. You know, it was the individual who was supposed to fight the state. In the context of the amendment was written, it was the states that were supposed to fight the federal government. The states are the ones that regulated the militia. Therefore, any state that wants to, in my mind, would have the right to ban firearms immediately. That's why New York City, you know, is able to pass a law that says you cannot carry a handgun. They can perfectly outlaw them.
Right. Well, this is also, you know, Congress shall not pass any laws, but it doesn't prevent, as you said, it doesn't prevent the states. And therefore, you do have states that have very stringent gun control laws and other states
right.
that have, like in Vermont, I can carry a concealed weapon without, you know, with no permit. I mean, nobody even has to know that I own it, much less that I'm carrying
right.
it.
That's right, because, I mean, up until you know, they actually created the National Guards, I mean, actual states, I mean, the federal government would levy troops from states, and states had their own arsenals.
Right, and they had their own militias. You know, the first 15, 20 years of this country, maybe a little longer than that, the state militias were really very significant forces in America.
It was actually up until the Spanish-American War.
Was it? Okay.
Thanks. Yeah, if you look at the army that went into Cuba, for example, I mean those were state levies,
state militias.
And the concept of the federal government was that the concept behind West Point is that you would train professionals and the states would provide troops, and that's where the standing army came from. It gave you a cadre of people that could actually command a militia.
Interesting. And that certainly changed. It certainly changed after the Civil War. You know that had to have been a major turning point for all of that.
Well, it did. But, I mean, it actually changed when they created the National Guard. That's when states started, stopped doing the whole militia thing, and it actually became federalized. That's why that's why you got the National Guard unit here in New Mexico, for example, that the federal government can call up whenever it wants to.
Joel, when was the National Guard created?
What's that?
When was the National Guard created?
I believe it was created in the 1890s.
Interesting.
At the turn of the century.
Okay,
and,
thanks.
Up to that point.
Thanks for the history lesson. Is there a therefore in there? I mean, a specific point that you wanted to make about your for or against the assault weapon ban? I mean, that being the topic of the day?
Well, I mean, everyone looks to the federal government to do it, and I think actually what you need to do is look to the states to do it. I mean, a state can ban and regulate or, limit anything they want to.
Yeah.
It doesn't become a constitutional issue because the last clause in the Constitution, I think in the separation of powers, it says any power that's not regulated to the Congress.
It's the 10th Amendment, yeah.
The federal government,
right.
Yes. It automatically falls to the state.
Well, the 9th Amendment says it falls to the people, and then the 10th Amendment says that all those others don't, they fall to the states. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Good point. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it, Joel. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Let's go to line one, Rachel in Santa Fe. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Tom. This is Narlodius from the chat room. I also was at the Kerry rally this morning in Santa Fe. And you know what? He's an excellent on-one-foot speaker.
This Kerry or Edwards?
Oh, Edwards. I'm sorry,
Edwards.
John
okay.
Edwards.
Yeah.
And he can speak on one foot, and he can actually answer questions. And he's a very good speaker and a real fine man.
Yeah, well, apparently, his eloquence, his oratory eloquence, I don't think has ever been in doubt. It's how he earned his living, right? I mean, he got rich convincing juries that people had been harmed, apparently, when they actually had been harmed. I mean, let's assume that juries are not dummies. But, he got rich by his oratorical eloquence. It's great that he's applying it to politics. I love to see talented people coming into the political arena, particularly those with whom I agree.
It's exciting to listen to a politician who is in the realm of old-fashioned oratory, but he said something very interesting that reminded me of something you say, and that is when he answered a question involving the HIV epidemic, and his first response was, "This is a moral issue." And you know when you hear a politician normally say something's a moral issue, you usually expect a Bible-thumping evangelist to go on and on and on a tirade.
Right.
But in this case, he said, we are morally obligated to assisting the world in helping them overcome their epidemic because their epidemic is our epidemic. And that reminds me of something that you say, in which you say that conservatives are normally concerned with what people are doing in their bedroom. And liberals, when they talk about morality, are concerned with the morality of social issues.
Yeah, really the way I frame it is that conservative morality tends to be about private morality, private behavior. And liberal morality tends to be about public morality, public behavior. So conservatives are worried about who's sleeping with whom and whether somebody's getting high in their own home. And liberals are more concerned with whether we have hungry among us, whether we have homeless among us. You know, the Matthew 25 issues, basically, to put it in a religious context.
Well, I really think that this Kerry and Edwards really gets it as far as the morality issue, and it's very refreshing, and I'm behind them all the way.
Great.
Well, thank you for letting me say that, Tom.
Sure. Thanks for calling, Rachel. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. So much happening here, and it's... well, let's just go to Roy in Rio Rancho here. Line 3, Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Roy.
A couple, 3 points. It's so often, so infrequently that I disagree with you that I'm disagreeing with you on the gun issue. Today.
Good. Go for it.
Well, I don't even
convince me I'm wrong.
It's over. You know, it's over.
What is?
And the assault ban thing, it's not going to be renewed. I don't agree that Kerry was being courageous. I think he stepped in it again. He gave the NRA something else to shoot at him.
Well, it may and well be. They
lost so many folks back in, what was it, 92 or 94 when the NRA went after the reps so hard. And it's dead for now.
But see, let me take that back, Roy. I don't think he stepped in, and I don't think he screwed it up. He spoke his heart. He spoke truth. And I think that we both have to salute a politician who's willing to speak truth, even when it's a truth that's going to lose you millions of dollars in campaign contributions and cause you to be vilified by one of the largest membership organizations in the United States. If it's truth, it deserves to be said.
He's already been vilified, so that doesn't matter. Yeah. But, you know, and I'm convinced that gun vote cost Gore the vote.
You think so?
I really think so.
I think Catherine Harris in Florida stripping 70,000 black people who legally were entitled to vote.
I'll agree there. I mean, there's so many different aspects, but I think that was a major aspect that if had that not been in play, then other things would have come.
But Ronald Reagan was in favor of the assault weapons ban. George Herbert Walker Bush was in favor of the assault weapons ban. I mean, when did this become a partisan issue?
Somewhere
George W. Bush says he's in favor of it.
It became an issue when the NRA made it an issue in 92 or 94.
But George W. Bush says he's in favor of renewing it.
Well, yeah.
It's just that everybody knows
really
that he's like
to get it, didn't he?
Yeah, and
hey,
it's just that all these guys.
W. Bush, and as long as I don't do anything about it, does it matter?
Right. It's just that all these guys are willing to say, well, okay, he may be a hypocrite, but he's our hypocrite.
But I got a good story to tell you, Tom.
Okay.
I was in a Western Wear store.
20 seconds, Roy.
I was in a Western Wear store yesterday, and a guy had a Bush sticker on. I had my Veterans for Carry on. The store was running a buy one pair of boots, get the second one free. We negotiated that we would buy the boots and take the discount together.
That's great.
And when we left, I was able to give him my information. He had none to give me because I already knew it.
That's
at least
great.
We hit the common ground that we needed to save some money.
Good on you, Roy. Good on you. Well done. Thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Tom Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets a $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for this Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. 1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just two votes, with five Republicans supporting the Democrats.
There may be some vocations that privatizing is a good thing. However, when it comes to national security and Department of Homeland Security's ability to protect the American public, these are not the positions that should be privatized.
Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Out in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
He also believes only trained professionals should be performing criminal background checks.
These jobs are privatized to somebody earning minimum wage to increase company profits. We run a greater risk of people being compromised in the positions that face it. These officers deal with criminal background investigations. They deal with counterterrorism efforts, and it's not the type of information that we want the general public to have access to or even have the ability to manipulate.
The amendment throws a wrench into congressional leaders' plans to recess for the year in October, before the November 2nd presidential and congressional elections. George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from New York City, Central Manhattan. We'll be back live in Vermont tomorrow. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Billy in Santa Cruz. Oh, Chris says you've never said what was in the U.S. report. Oh, the U.S. News and World Report. Thank you. Thank you very much, Louise. What's in the U.S. News and World Report is about George Bush lying about his service record. And they and saying that he earned enough points to basically the bottom line of the U.S. News and World Report article is that he should not have gotten an honorable discharge, and nobody can figure out how he did. He should have been prosecuted for desertion or should have been sent to Vietnam. Anyhow, that according to the law. Line one, Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, you must be crazy to suggest that there's favoritism with senators' sons and the like.
What? Favoritism? No, couldn't be. Couldn't be. No.
I have an attaboy and a shame, shame, shame.
Okay.
The attaboy is for the librarians of America who are just fighting the good fight and who had a Patriots Day celebration here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere this weekend.
Uh-huh. That's great.
And they had three questions that we discussed. The first one was basically, what do you love about America? The second was, what frightens you or you worry about? And the third was, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
At the forum that I went to at my library, there were about 40 of us. Only one conservative bothered to show up. You know, if you can't stand to hear the other side's opinion, you probably really don't believe in your own very strongly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't, back in the 60s, I didn't go to a lot of SDS meetings that had a lot of, you know, pro-war protesters there, but there was a lot of people in favor of the war. I mean, it was mostly just the local cops from the state police, you know.
But this wasn't an anti-war, pro-war thing. This was, hey, it's Patriots Day. What do you love about America?
Oh, I see.
What are you worried about?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it had to do with the Patriot Act. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah.
This is a reaction to the Patriot Act, but it's for every American to sort of, you know, just sort of say, where are you? And the conservatives and the Republicans said things like, when I made fun of them here on local radio, they said, well, you know, we were working that day. We have jobs and other
things. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right. That's why they can't vote. Billy, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where our talking points come from Madison and Jefferson, not from some right-wing think tank. Thanks to Louise for producing our program. Special thanks to Rama for engineering our program there in Vermont, and to the folks at Sirius Satellite Radio for providing us with a studio here in New York City to be on the air today. Check out the program tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll be back, same time, same place. See you here then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our